Good evening, everyone. Good evening. Welcome to the February 26th council meeting. Let the record know that we have a quorum. All members of the council are present, and please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you. And tonight I was going to ask Susan Stewart if she would lead us in the pledge. Please join us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Susan. And now if we can go into council members' announcements. Start with George. None. Christine?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to announce that it is only February, but the Morroway 4th of July committee is starting its planning for this coming July 4th weekend and holiday. And each year, the group raises $40,000 to provide the event to the community and to our guests. So if you're interested in being part of the team on any of the activities, their next meeting is March 8th at noon at the Embarcadero Grill. Or you can go online to morrobay4th.org and find out more information and contact information there. So it's a pretty exciting holiday that we celebrate every year here. So please do volunteer if you're considering it. And then there are three boards that I've been participating on countywide. I wanted to report out just briefly on those. Is this the time to do that, or would you
this
like?
This would be a great time for that.
Okay, great. I sit on, because of my position on the council, I also sit on three countywide boards, and I just wanted to give you an update because I just went to some of my first meetings. And those of you in the community who have interests that range in these boards, please feel free to look me up and we can talk about it. The first one is the SLO County Housing Trust Fund. And the mission, and I'm learning about these too. So the mission is to increase the supply of affordable housing in our county for very low, low, and moderate income residents, including households with special needs. So some of the things I'm learning that the goal for this organization, and they've been in existence for 10 years, and their goal is to get affordable housing projects going, and to loan out money to make those projects happen. So for the past 10 years, they have helped create 229 units in our county of this kind of housing. And kind of a scary statistic I learned is out of the 225 metro areas in the U.S., SLO County is the ninth least affordable housing market. So that means there are only eight places in the U.S. that it costs more in housing than San Luis Obispo County. And it's actually better than it was at one point. San Luis Obispo County was number two on the list. So these folks are really focused on getting projects underway, and I think we might have a few things happening in Morro Bay, and I'll follow up with staff on that soon. And then the next board I'm on is called the County Homeless Services Oversight Council, and that's a lead agency for the countywide 10-year plan to end homelessness, which was established in 2008, so the clock's definitely ticking there. And many people in Morro Bay were also involved in that process. I learned three types of homelessness. The first type is transitional homelessness, and that's 80% of the homeless population are considered transitional. The population tends to be younger, and they are our shelter users, but they use shelters for a short time and then get back on their feet. The next 10% are called episodic homeless.
Reminder that March 22nd is the spaghetti feed at the community center, and that supports the community foundation. And there are lots of things coming up in April, but we'll talk about those later.
Thank you. Noah?
Yeah, I just had one. It's mostly an update about the Estero Bay Radio. We are still moving forward with trying to get the low-power, low-frequency FM radio station for the Estero Bay, which would basically be a community radio station. It's currently online and streaming with live and replayed podcasts, and you can hear that by going to esterobayradio.com, and there's a number of local DJs that have shows focusing on local issues and nationwide issues, as well as good live music. And we are in the process, partnered with the city on applying for that FCC application. We're hoping to hear from the FCC in October, and at that point we would go live on the frequency 97.3 FM, which will be very exciting. But again, go to EsteroBayRadio.com, and if you're interested, they will be the feature for the Chamber of Commerce Business Forum, which is a bi-monthly event, or monthly event now, where they feature different business issues in the community. And that's going to be this Thursday, March 7th, from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., focused on the radio at the Embarcadero Grill, which is 801 Embarcadero, second floor, pretty much across from the giant chessboard. So that's the Estero Bay Radio, The Rock, and hopefully we'll be hearing that on our FM station sometime soon this year.
Great, thank you. And that concludes the announcements and presentations. And now for our closed session report from our city attorney, Mr. Schultz.
Yes, good evening. Two closed sessions to report tonight in closed session prior to our regular session. Council met in closed session for labor negotiations and real property transactions. In regards to labor negotiations, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act. With regards to real property transactions, the property discussed with 3420 Toro Lane. No action was taken by the council requires reporting. The council did direct staff to proceed with the abandonment proceedings in open session. With regards to the other closed session item on February 25th, 2013, the council discussed real property transactions, specifically 23 different lease sites on the Embarcadero. As to all 23 lease sites, they are currently in negotiations of various forms. No action was taken by council that requires reporting. The council, though, did discuss and direct staff to hold a public study session on the Tideland leases, which will be held on March 25th at 6 p.m.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. And that brings us to, we have a couple of proclamations tonight, so I would ask council to items A4 and A5 so we can deliver these proclamations. If I can have a motion or motion for that.
So moved.
And pardon me, let me reword that. So if we can pull those and approve those right now, we'll just go ahead and pull those two items and approve them right now. If we can make a motion to pull and approve them, would that?
Yes, I'll pull A4 and A5 for approval.
Any seconds?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries, and we'll take the two proclamations, and I'll meet the two folks up at the up at the podium. Thanks. Thanks, Joy, for joining us. We have a proclamation from the City of Morro Bay declaring Tuesday, February 26, 2013, as World Spay Day. And I'll read out the proclamation. Whereas pets provide companionship to more than 71 million households in the United States, and whereas humane societies and animal shelters have to put down millions of cats, dogs, rabbits, and other animals each year, many of whom are healthy and adoptable due to a lack of critical resources and public awareness, and whereas this tragic overpopulation of pets costs citizens and taxpayers of this country millions of dollars annually through animal service programs aimed at coping with millions of homeless animals, and whereas spaying and neutering... Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very
thank
much.
You. And do you have some things to
just,
say?
Just a really
thank you.
Thing.
Thank you. I'll
yeah.
give you that as well.
First, I want to say thank you. We
many people are aware of what is quite literally the warm and fuzzy side of what we do at Woods, adoption, caring for homeless animals. But spay and neuter is also critical to our mission, and part of that is raising awareness and education, and you have helped us do that today, and we are very grateful. So thanks.
And with Kathleen? Again, Kathleen, thanks for joining us. All right, thank you. Thank you. I'll read your proclamation. Thank you. This proclamation comes from the city of Morro Bay, supporting the buy local policy of the County of San Luis Obispo. Whereas the City of Morro Bay is committed to preserving local agriculture, land, and ag open space within its city limits and hosts two weekly farmers markets as well as a community garden where citizens engage in urban agriculture. And whereas extraordinary agriculture products are produced year-round within San Luis Obispo County. And whereas public institutions play a vital role in providing leadership and setting an example in support of a sustainable food supply, and whereas many restaurants in our city buy locally and feature locally grown food on their menus, not only to provide patrons with excellent food, but also to showcase regional specialties, and whereas buying local supports our local economy, keeps money circulating within our own community, and helps ensure food securing by keeping local farms and ranches in production. And whereas fresh food is healthier and tastier and helps fight the obesity epidemic. And whereas buying local may help us decrease our carbon footprint by reducing long-distance transportation and large-scale packaging, storage, and preparation of food. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I and the City of Morro Bay hereby proclaim support for buying local and urge city residents to purchase and consume local agricultural products to help promote economic vitality, support our local food shed, and to promote public health by making fresh and nutritious produce readily available for all. Thank you very much. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Kathleen Carley, and I'm a division manager in the County Public Health Department. I'm also a member of Healthy Eating Active Lifestyle San Luis Obispo, or HEAL SLOW. HEAL SLOW is the countywide obesity prevention coalition. Obesity is a prevalent and ongoing issue for our country as well as our county. In 2007, the Board of Supervisors approved a community action plan to increase healthful eating and regular physical activity among children in our county. One of the strategies was to adopt and implement countywide policies that increase accessibility to healthy foods and physical activity opportunities. We know that policy work is key to turning the obesity tide. The work done in the tobacco field is a great model. In the 1950s, close to 50% of the American population smoked cigarettes. Today, only about 10% of the population of our county smokes. A large reason why smoking rates have dropped so dramatically has to do with policies that ban smoking, such as the smoking ban enacted by your city last year. The county passed a buy local policy in July 2012, which directs staff to purchase produce from local farmers whenever possible. Why buy local? Your mayor mentioned a lot of the reasons, but it may local food is healthier and tastier, and when people consume healthy products, it may reduce their consumption of unhealthy items. By passing this proclamation, you join the cities of San Luis Obispo, Arroyo Grande, Pismo Beach, and Paso Robles, who have already passed this proclamation, and Grover Beach and Atascadero are in progress. We thank you for your support. In just a minute, this is Jenna Smith, who's Executive Director of Central Coast Grown.
Good evening. It is an honor to be here tonight accepting this proclamation beside Kathleen. I am the Executive Director of Central Coast Grown, an organization that works to create and support a local food system here in San Luis Obispo County. Agriculture in our county has a gross value of $7.3 million in 2011, which is a substantive industry in our county, and yet the average age of farmers is 59 years old. So we're seeing one of our largest industries facing retirement at the same time that prohibitive land costs are increasing. The value of row cropland in our county in 2003 was around $10,000 to $25,000 an acre. In 2011, that number had increased all the way up to top range $65,000 an acre.
So we have a business that are that's going to speak and tell a little bit about themselves. So that would be Alexis and Joanne. Are you gonna? Would you come up? And that would be for Threads.
Thank you for having us here tonight. I'd first like to take this opportunity to announce my candidacy for Fashion Police Commissioner. Yeah, it's a job that I feel I am strongly qualified for, as I'm compelled to tell people what to wear.
Okay. Do you want to throw me out now or a little later?
Yes. Okay. Anyway, a little bit about Threads. Which obviously Threads is, you know, 1960s lingo for clothing for men, women, children, groovy threads. That's what we specialize in. But we have other things, right, Joanna?
Yes, we do, of course. Furniture, tchotchkes galore, jewelry, shoes.
Please speak into the mic, Joanne.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jewelry, shoes, many things. Too many to mention. Hats.
Yes.
And if you haven't been in, you must, because it will be the most fun you've had shopping in a long time. So I hope all of you have at least come in to say hi.
And the store is owned by Kim Pelzel, and she goes out every day far and wide to find all this fabulous stuff that she brings in, vintage clothes, furniture, hats, accessories. So weekly we're putting out new things on the floor, which makes it a whole lot of fun, gives you a reason to come in regularly. And Joanna and I are both there to help you through any fashion crisis that you might face, you know, whether it's a soiree, yes, a beach wedding, or you just need a t-shirt to rock your jeans, something like that. We've got it. This April, we're going to conduct a fashion show. We haven't set the date yet, but we'll be sure to let you know because you'll want to join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll have customers modeling and, you know.
We'll do all the styling, and there'll be music, wine, and fun galore. You have to come in and really see what the store is about to get excited about it. If, you know, vintage is our passion and something we hope all of you can get a taste of. I think
that's it, Joanna.
Yes, we're going to take questions from the gallery, please.
Yes, yes. If you have any questions, you know, such as
nerve-wracking.
Your location and your hours of business?
That
would be important.
400 Morro Bay Boulevard, and we're open 10:30 to 5:30, 7 days a week.
And you are dog-friendly. I must attest to that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Very dog-friendly.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and with that, we're now open for public comment. We wish that for those of you that have public comment and want to address us, please do so. State your name for the record, and you have approximately 3 minutes to make your public comment. Please come on.
Mayor and council members, my name is Bonnie Johnson, resident of Morro Bay. I am here to ask your support in putting a bike park back in Morro Bay. The idea parallels that of Morro Bay Dog Park and Morro Bay Pups. The bike park would be overseen by the city, but built and maintained by the Morro Bay Bike Group. Funding would be raised by the Morro Bay Bike Park Group through sponsors, donations, and fundraising. We would commit to volunteer hours each month, agreed upon by the city's Recreation Parks Department and the Morro Bay Bike Park Group upon approval. The benefits of the bike park are many. There is no other outdoor bike park in this county, therefore it would draw people to the city. It would get our local youth involved in the community by volunteering at the bike park as well as riding it. Getting people of all ages out in the outdoor activities can never be a bad idea.
At the previous bike park, there was always somebody there participating in the bike park, hanging out with friends, and even having birthday parties. IMBA, which is an International Mountain Biking Association, I met with them last month, and they have committed to helping get this bike park going with designs and volunteers and ideas. I've also been in contact with Lee McCormick, and he's a gentleman who builds bike parks for events and communities. He's given support for the designs, ideas, and volunteers as well. I've looked at every possible city property to have a bike park put in it. For the time being, there are just a few possible locations. Radcliffe and Maine.
Great. Thank you. There you go. All right. We got it. I think we've got a group over here.
Good evening. My name is Janelle Muff, and I'm one of the leaders of this amazing Girl Scout troop. All of the girls live in Morro Bay and are between the ages of 5 and 11. We're here tonight to share with you that it is Girl Scout cookie time. I'm going to let the girls go ahead and tell you more about that.
Through cookie sales, we learn about good settings, decision making, money management, business ethics, and how to interact with people.
We sell 6 types of cookies: the lemony Savannah smiles, the traditional shortbread trefoils, the peanut butter sandwich do-si-dos, the caramel, chocolate, and coconutty Samoas, the peanut butter and chocolate patties, and the minty and chocolatey thin mints.
Cookies are $4 per box.
We will have a booth sale this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Spencer's Market. We will also be at Farmer's Market on Thursday, March 7th.
Through generous donations, our troop has already donated 81 boxes of cookies to military troops overseas.
With the money we earn, we will donate much-needed items to Wood Humane Society and the Woman's Shelter. We also hope to help our terrific city in some way.
This cookie, mommy. This cookie helps fund a camp for city kids. This cookie cheers up soldiers overseas. This cookie teaches girls how to manage money. Every cookie has a mission to help girls do great things.
Please help support your local girls, your local Girl Scouts. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, and we have a small donation for you that you can arm wrestle for later.
Janelle, could you help with names for all the kids on the piece of paper, please, as well? Thank you. That'd be great.
Sure. Good evening. Bill Martin, Morro Bay. Boy, that's a tough one to follow.
It is a tough one to follow.
What was interesting, the one before, talking about a bike park, and you're talking about abandoning Toro Lane. Seems like maybe a pretty good fit for a mountain bike type of little terrain out there. Just a thought. Anyway, primarily I'm here tonight to talk about a special closed-door session that you had noticed on Friday. It was one working day notice held Monday at 3:30 discussing over, I think it was approximately 70 different lease sites under 23 different owners. And the reason I bring this up, I think, number one, the noticing was with one day and such a massive, this is almost half the Embarcadero, the lease sites. Very important, and I'm glad to hear that in closed door you decided to actually have a public workshop on this. You know, that's one thing. I know I talked in closed door on it. I'm glad to hear that. But I do also believe that, like I mentioned, at closed door, that items like this need to not be held in closed door, because in closed door it was described as negotiating the price and terms of the lease. And closed door session under the Brown Act is very, very limited on real estate negotiation. 2011, I can furnish everyone with it if need be, but to that fact that closed door is strictly limited to negotiating the price and terms, and that everything else should just be open like government's supposed to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else for public comment?
Good evening, Mayor and council members. My name is Alex Koshlikev. I'm 21 years old, and I'm a mountain biker here locally. And I work at Art Cyclery in San Luis Obispo. I'm here tonight to speak about the bike park, the proposed bike park. As a professional mountain biker, I've seen firsthand the impact a legal place to ride can have for kids of all ages, really. Gives kids like a sense of discipline with building the park and maintaining it, and also just the fact that their riding can keep kids out of trouble, which is always good. Currently, the closest legal bike park that I'm aware of is in Aptos, California, which is about 2.5 hours north of here. So having a bike park in this area would eliminate the need to travel that far just to ride your bicycle. I personally know that this area has a very dedicated group of mountain bikers that would not only show support in possible monetary donations, but in helping dig and do whatever kind of physical work needs to be done there. That's about it. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Alex. Good job out there.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Drew Sedaris. I'm a Morro Bay Recreation Parks Commissioner. I'm here to address the use for the open space over there at the southwest corner of Shasta and Kennedy. We're talking about perhaps having a community garden or a pocket park, and I believe we've come up with a pocket park suggestion, unless we're going to make a Girl Scout cookie factory, which is number two on my list. But I think you have in your packet there's five different proposals that we came up with for use of that land. Three of them being, I think, community gardens, and two of them being pocket parks. So if you have a chance to look at those, do you have any questions? I haven't had a chance to look at them. Do you have any questions on those at the moment?
We may be able to bring that back with that.
Okay. Would you like me to stay?
Sure, that would be great.
Address that later? Okay.
Yeah.
I thought this was my time to do this. But
it is, actually.
Okay. Well,
if you can conclude with your remarks, that'd be great. And if we have any comments and we feel like we could want to ask you up and make some more, we can do that. But if you want to conclude with your comments, that'd be great.
Basically, that's what your Recreation Parks Commissioners have come up with, those five ideas. We think that 1 in 5, if it's going to be more of a temporary park, 1 in 5 plus 1 in 5 are also easier to maintain. A lot less, more cost effective. 2, 3, and 4 are more permanent, have water features and things that would take maintenance and cost more money in the long run. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your service, too, Drew. Any other public comment?
I'm also here to support the bike park. I went around at school from Monday and today, and I got almost 100 signatures from many people at the high school. So I think that it'd be a lovely thing for kids around here to do, because there's only really the teen center that we can go to, and it's not for everybody. So I think it'd be fun.
Great.
Oh, and I'm Emily Gaykad.
Thanks, Emily.
My name is Betty Winholtz, and I came to speak about an item that happened up at the state parks today, and that is that the Davy Company was contracted by PG&E to do some work around the utility lines with the permission of state parks. However, this is all happening following February 1st, which is our cutoff date for when we do not cut or trim trees, because it's nesting season until the 1st of June. And a neighbor alerted me to this that lives over near the Black Hill, and I tried to call State Parks, PG&E, Davy Company, and ultimately came up with the fact that they choose to ignore our ordinance. And so I just want to bring this to your attention and hope that Mr. Woods either was involved with the scoping session that they had or can get back to them, and somehow we need to work out that they're in our city limits and they need to obey our ordinances. And we do this for a reason that you would assume state parks would be interested in, which is to protect nesting birds. And so that's a concern, and I would hope that
they're better. That I should feel honored and like my name was there. And he mentioned several weeks ago that the author loves to write about people in a demeaning way. Really? Well, I've heard about the shredder, but I've never had time to really read that type of garbage writing. I know I've had 3 years of journalism in college, and one thing my professor taught us was how responsible journalists and photographers, when reading articles, first, who is the author? Next, what is their motive about publishing the article? So then it's up to the reader whether you want to read it or not, and I gave my opinion on them. However, after reading the article, I could only chuckle and laugh to myself. The author labeled me as a whiner, that I'm not always, and I'm always trying to protect my wife, City Councilwoman Nancy Johnson. To set the record straight, evidently he or she does not know my wife at all. Nancy does not need any protection from me or anybody else. Nancy is her own person. And who should I know better than I, after being married 47 years to the sweet, lovely wife that it's unbelievable. So if that person is brave enough, which I doubt, he or she should interview Nancy. That way he or she would identify and have a different opinion of her. Remember, people voted for Nancy to represent them. And people come up to us all the time thanking her for speaking up at the city council meeting. So, anyway, I'll leave it like that and see if the shredder's going to respond. And remember, I'm changing the subject, Moral Photo Expo, I got my hat on, is set for April 18th to 21st. Classes will be small. No, and sign up early. We will be contacting Morro Bay businesses to help support the event. We want to be at as big. Thank you.
Thank
you,
Gary.
Have a nice evening.
Thank you. Any other? Here we go. More public comment. All right.
Good evening, Mayor and Council and staff. I wasn't going to say anything, and then I just start writing.
Please state your name, Linda.
Linda Merrill.
Thank you.
Thank you. I support A3, A4, and A5. And I was thinking maybe we could purchase some Girl Scout cookies and have them at the council meeting someday. That might be nice. I am concerned about the difference between
some of our newly elected council members' philosophies, perhaps, and our old policies. It seems government just goes on as before, in spite of a change in philosophies. And so I'm sure there are hundreds of policies that are already written down that maybe need to be looked into, and maybe we could have them reflect some new ideas and some new demands that our council might have in mind, and things that would improve the policies. So if you all could give that some thought, I'd really appreciate it. Could I ask, Andrea, I know we had a BMX track here some years ago, and I wonder, is that the kind of track the young people are describing here, or do they want a bigger track or a different kind of track? Maybe someone could explain, you know, what they're requesting. So I think, anyway, I've covered everything. Thank you all, and have a good evening.
Thank you, Linda. Perhaps you can talk with Bonnie as well. I think she might be able to help you with some of the information about the bike park.
Good evening. I'm Nancy Castle, a resident of Morro Bay, and dedicated to having fun in 2013. On the overhead is a slide about our first singing and supper at St. Peter's, which is called Supper, Tangos, and More, and features three musicians who have been playing all their... I'm starting a new division of AGP. It's called Art Goes Places. And with that idea, what I'm hoping that we can do in Morro Bay for Car Show Weekend and lead into the Sock Off is that everybody in Morro Bay dress like, like the 50s. I mean, at the very minimum, that means dark blue jeans pegged and a white shirt, T-shirt or dress shirt, and a swagger. And you're in costume. And then we've got poodle skirts, we've got, you know, the big flouncy skirts, we've got the nice Donna Reed dresses. You know, if everybody in town got into the mojo of it all and played it up, we'd have a wonderful time, and it'd be kind of like a different flash mob, and it could be a very impressive thing for promotion and all of those wonderful things that we like to talk about. And then don't forget the Sock Hop, which will be on Saturday night. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nancy. Anybody else?
Evening, council members and mayor. My name is Jordan Smith. I'm 18 years old, a senior at Morro Bay High School, an employee at Art Cyclery, just like Alex, and also a professional mountain biker. I think the bike park really would be a great idea. I mean, when I probably started riding mountain bikes in fifth grade, so a little bit after the original bike park on Atascadero Road was taken down. And honestly, almost me and all my friends rode mountain bikes. And then the later it got into it, less and less people started riding because there was nowhere to ride. And now really I'm probably one of the only people that's taken it as far as I did from Morro Bay, just because the places to ride bikes have gone down. We started originally, we were the ones that built the bike park over on Main Street there between Radcliffe, or not a bike park, but the jumps maybe 2 or 3 years ago, which got a lot of interest by the little kids there. I mean, not just us who actually competed, raced bikes, or that was our thing. A lot of people started showing up and showing interest in the bikes up until the day that got closed down, and then it kind of just went away again. And I mean, a place to ride bikes would be a huge thing, just like Alex said, Santa Cruz being the closest legal bike park in the whole Central Coast area, nothing in Santa Barbara, nothing in as far as Ventura, or I can't even think of places in LA really. So I mean, I think it would make a big destination place for a lot of the mountain bikers and be a really good thing, get kids in the community, put in work. And I mean, because school sports, team sports aren't something for everybody. There's people like me and Alex and those kind of kids, so something for all of us. Thanks for your guys' time.
Thanks, Jordan.
Barbara Doerr, Morro Bay. Before I begin the agenda part, I'd like to join with the group that's here in support of a bike park. Signed the petition yesterday, and that would be an absolutely wonderful thing for our kids. At this time, I'd like to, I guess it would be agenda item 10-5 and the item that I presented to the City Council today. I've done a survey of the 25 cities within the Channel Cities region of the League of California Cities to determine how many of those cities have public participation only and restrictively at the beginning of the council meeting. And just so you know, only 2 out of the 25, somehow there's 26 on the page though, but only 2 out of those 26 have a meeting like yours. Simi Valley is the other city. They have a population 126,000. You might understand that. The attachment, the 7-page attachment, takes excerpts from the either agendas, minutes, or rules of procedure from those 26 cities. So you can see, and I did it in the MS Word, cut and paste, so it's not all perfect, but I tried to keep the integrity of the document. I didn't make changes. It's exactly from what they have on their city council agendas. And if I couldn't figure it out from reviewing the minutes and the policies, I did have to call in one case. But I hope, and I'm so pleased, Mayor Irons, that you've brought your item forward and you're recommending that public comment be at the beginning of the meeting and during the agenda items. It provides continuity and understanding of the agenda item that's before the council, and I just think that's wonderful, and I thank you for doing that. The one item in here, Santa Paula, I'd look through, and I hoped you would do it, to pick out the one that might be best. And Santa Paula, I made a larger copy. Some of that's hard.
In your item D6, you're talking about the wastewater plant, and I wanted to I know that you council people are all aware of what I'm going to speak about, but I'd like to point out that we had a JPA meeting on Valentine's Day, February 14th, and the JPA partner talked about the cooperation and how we were going to proceed with the new plant since the Coast Commission has turned us down. And one of the commissioners said, well, we're together until we're not together. So it's very interesting. I attended the Cayuga Sanitary District's board meeting this last week. And at the board meeting, there was presented a proposal. Now, this proposal is very interesting. It was dated on February 15th. One day after the JPA meeting, the Cayuga Sanitary District received a 6-page proposal. Now, the proposal, the title pretty well says it all. Subject: proposal to develop conceptual alternatives for the treatment and disposal of wastewater collected by the Cayuga Sanitary District. So, a company called Water Systems Consulting, the person that works over there now is, I think he's familiar with the project. His name is Mr. Dylan Wade. He's made the proposal to the Cayuga Sanitary District. And so in your discussion this evening, I'm sure you are already aware of this, but I needed to bring it to the other publics, that the first paragraph is really says it all. So this proposal is to provide professional engineering services to develop preliminary conceptual alternatives for the treatment and disposal of wastewater collected in the Cayuga Sanitary District's collection system. These preliminary conceptual alternatives will be selected to bookend the range of alternatives available to the district, provide some rough order of magnitude cost, and inform the district's future efforts. So basically, to boil it down, and I think it's a very good idea, Cayuga is looking at an alternate plant. They're going to try to find possibility. They're having a workshop on March the 5th with their board of directors and our meeting with the water systems consultant. They're going to look at maybe they're going to do some different location, different way to treat the plant, build their own facility, find a location, and look at the cost of operating. This letter, has been circulated, being circulated, and you can look at the details on it. I think it's refreshing to see that finally they're seeing that maybe they should do it. I think they should, and I think we should do ours. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Any other public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And I just wanted to address a couple of things. First off, to Mr. Martone about the noticing. I believe we have 24 hours to notice on that. And though it might have been a short period, I think we might have made that, but I can refer to our city attorney whether or not the time was correct on that. But I think we've had that discussion, and I think in the future we'll be making sure that that time frame is maybe on the little bit positive side of the 24 hours, so we can address that. Mr. Schultz, did you want to comment on that as well?
Not on that issue, on the other issue.
Okay, go ahead.
Of the recusal on the, I did not mention, I apologize for that, at the February 25th, 2013 meeting, Mr. League did not participate in any of the discussion on all 23 items on the agenda for that date.
Thank you. And then there was a, I'll just cover a couple questions and then turn it over to my colleagues here. The one item about the ordinance, that might be more towards Mr. Livick and working with the state parks on the, I think it's the burn and the fuel remediation for state parks. Are you aware of that and whether or not the our ordinance and how it conflicts or works with state parks on that?
I believe Ms. Winsholz was referring to Davey was working for PG&E trimming underneath their high voltage lines, which we were noticed of today that they were going to be doing that work. The state park falls under the
and with that I think that covered my remarks. I'll to the left, Mr. League, would you like to make any remarks or comments? No. Christine?
Thank you. Yes, I'd just like to ask the director of Rec and Parks to, if he has comments on the bike park, maybe just in response to so much public comment this evening. Thank you.
Certainly. Good evening, Mayor and Council. It's the removal of the BMX track that was on Tascadero Road was definitely an unfortunate happenings. It was a transfer of real estate property, so it was the future of that property is for the new owner. We certainly would be interested in bringing up the issue with the Records and Parks Commission and reviewing any possibilities that may lend itself to establishing a BMX track or something very similar within our city limits.
Okay. Nancy, any? Noah? Okay. Okay, that brings us to a consent calendar. Anybody have anything to pull on our consent calendar?
Pull A2.
A2. I'd like to pull A3. We've already done our proclamations A5 and A6. Excuse me. A6 is a presentation which wasn't done tonight, so we can go ahead and approve that, I guess, even though it's not done. And then so A4 and A5, so we need to approve A6, A1. Do I have hear a motion to approve A1 and items A6
I'd move to approve A1 and A6.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. That brings us to item A2. Nancy?
I'm just pulling that to vote no.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. Do we want to make a motion to approve A2?
Move to approve A2.
Any second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 3-2. On to item A3. And I'd like to pull this one. I wanted some discussion on this and clarification for Eric, if you could just go ahead and just give us a brief. I know the staff report's here, and I just have some questions for you, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Sure. Good evening, Mayor and Council. So you just want a real quick, maybe a brief summary of the summary?
Thank you.
So last year, about wintertime, our major primary response vessel 6-8 suffered a pretty major structural failure on a rescue mission. We successfully repaired it, but it really needs to be retired as the vessel's primary boat, or as the city's primary boat. So in last spring, we entered into the budget process, budgeted $200,000 for it with our need for the new vessel and with council direction to go in that direction, knowing that $200,000 wouldn't get us as far as we needed to get funding-wise, but also knowing that we'd be pursuing other funding sources such as grants and whatnot, which we have. We have secured one grant from the Department of Voting and Waterways to the amount of $80,000. I made a presentation today to the Cable Liaison Committee for another $80,000 grant. They'll be considering that tomorrow, and we'll see where we go from there, depending on what their decision is. Early on, last spring, we were scoping out a vessel in the 26 to 27-foot range, twin-engine gasoline, in the 6 to 8 months. Since then, in the end of the last year, and scoping it, speaking to other agencies, speaking to boat manufacturers, boat builders, and working with our fire department and what their needs were in terms of a firefighting platform, a 28 to 30 foot vessel was really the appropriate size vessel with diesel power to really equip us into the future for what we needed. Our initial estimate last year, construction estimate, was $250,000 to $300,000. Our low bid came in, so in mid-January we went out to bid on a 28 to 30 foot vessel, twin diesel powered. Got two bids in, both from Goleta, both from boat builders down in Goleta, the low bid being $401,000, a little over than what we originally estimated last spring. But again, really creating the mission-ready vessel that we needed. We are, like I say, we're continuing to seek other grant funding. I'm going to go to the Department of Boating and Waterways, depending on what comes out of the Cable Committee tomorrow. We're requesting award of the bid and a budget amendment to complete the total budget amount. Not knowing what our grant outcome will be for the cable grant or potential other DBW or other bids, we're requesting budget amendment for the full shortfall that we have right now, which is $121,000, is after the money we already have earmarked for the North T Pier, the money we have earmarked for the other capital projects. The North P Pier is really the big one right now. So those ones are already set aside. It's still in the fund, but it just hasn't been spent. It's earmarked. So, yeah, that's the idea with the reserve fund is for all of our projects, whether they're big equipment or pier, slip, rebuilds, all that comes out of the accumulation of the reserve fund.
Good. Thank you. All right. Thanks for asking that, answering that. Any other questions?
Yeah, I just had a quick question. I'm looking at the bids. I'm somewhat familiar with one of the boat builders, the low bidder, but that is a pretty large range. It's almost $130,000 in difference between the two. Do you have any idea about where that would be coming from as far as their skills or the quality of the boat?
I do not. That boat builder was Bill Anderson. Basically, Don Radden and the Radden Boat Building Company were created back in the 60s and 70s, and Bill Anderson worked with that family through the 70s and branched out on his own probably in the mid-70s to 80s. So they're very like vessels, very like design, of like quality. Ventura Harbor had a similar, little larger boat built a couple of years ago, and these two boat builders were in competition with each other. And on that bid, the Anderson boat builder, which was our higher bid, was about $100,000 less, apparently, from what I've been told. So it really flip-flopped. And talking to our successful bidder after we went through this process, he was, you know, quite frankly puzzled how the previous bid was so upside down and this one's the opposite. So I have no reservations whatsoever about the quality and performance we'll get out of this boat builder versus the other.
And I would assume, outside of any change orders, that bid is very stable, just considering their experience.
Yes. I mean, they put time into it. They knew, you know, last summer that we were building specifications and going into this process, so they've been sharpening their pencils for a while. So, yes, and it's a not-to-exceed bid amount, like say, but granted any major changes, which I don't anticipate. We spent a lot of time building those specifications, so we've hopefully got them right on.
All right, thank you. And just a comment on the incident that led to the current vessel's need to be replaced was a very serious and scary one for the employees that were involved offshore, and this is definitely a need that we have in the department, so I support this.
Okay. Any other comments? Do I hear a motion to approve A6?
So moved.
Any seconds?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. If we could take just a short break following our consent calendar, we'll be back in about 5 minutes. Thank you. Everybody, welcome back. We are back on public hearings and item B1 for public input on 2013 City Council goals, and I will turn that over to our city manager, Ms. Luker.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and City Council. This is another opportunity for the public to provide the City Council, as well as staff, their input on the city goals. Following this public hearing, we'll still be taking written comments, and we still have an email address that's available. It's goals@morrow-bay.ca.us for any submissions. We're hoping to have everything by February 28th, and we'll be tabulating all that information and providing it to the council members as well as the general public in preparation for our goal-setting process, which will be March 13th. March 13th. So at this point, I'll turn it back over to you, Mayor Irons, to open up the public comment.
Thank you. And with that, public comment is open for hearing item on public input for our 2013 City County Goals or City Goals, City Council Goals.
Good evening, Mayor and Council again. My name is Linda Merrill, and I've been sent by my friends to deliver this message. My neighbor and friend would like to have more bicycle and pedestrian ways, paths. And another woman asked me to mention that she thinks we need a men's clothing store in town and a Rexall drug. And she would like to, of course, see all of our empty buildings down.
The city of San Francisco has one, and the sheet that I provided gives a description of theirs. You can get the information from the city of San Francisco. The League of California Cities website discusses sunshine laws, and what it does is it allows you to go above and beyond what the Brown Act might legally require. So if there's any concern regarding the legality of what you're doing, you can just say we think we want the very most open city government, and we want to encourage participation in our community, so we'll include it in our sunshine ordinance and do more to involve the community. And the other item I've submitted is the rezoning of the power plant property to non-industrial uses such as coastal-dependent, visitor-serving commercial, recreation, fishing, boating support services, local recreation, education, and habitat restoration. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to ensure clean economic development on this massive and important coastal site when the current power plant has reached the end of its useful life. This will stop its replacement with another power plant that pollutes the air and water, creates unwanted noise, discourages viable, clean, visitor-serving economic development, and generally creates a large scenic blight in our beautiful waterfront area. There's recommendations. There are three steps that I put forward, and I'm looking at something low cost. Start with the committee. It has certain recommendations for membership. Have them hold public hearings. Save you some time. Let them come up with a list. Hold the workshops. Listen to the that's it. And then present that to the city council and proceed with the normal process for rezoning and general plan and local coastal plan. Thank you for your time. Look forward to the additional workshops. And I've already given you copies of these. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Anyone else for public comment for our city goals? Seeing none, close public comment. And with that, that closes that item. There's no more comments for that. Noah, you've got a comment on that?
Yeah, I just wanted to correct the hearing dates and times. We do have one on the 13th that was mentioned from 1 to 4:30, but we also will have one on the 11th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. And both of those will be here at the Vets Hall.
Thank you.
Mayor Irons.
Oh, we've got a correction on that.
Well, because Councilmember Smuckler corrected me, I just feel like I have to correct him. And just I believe that both of those will be at the community center.
Oh, great. Thank you. Touche.
But we're good, right?
Oh, yeah.
We are.
And may I ask a question, please?
Yes.
Well, there will be public comment at the beginning of those goal-setting workshops, yes?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that would close item B1. No actions taken on that. That brings us to item D1, and that would be Ms. Slayton.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and Council. Tonight, I'm presenting the mid-year budget amendment requests. Along with that is a presentation from our Measure Q committee on last fiscal year's revenues and expenditures. And additionally, as requested by the Council, is the December 31st, 2012 investment portfolio report. For mid-year, staff is requesting $236,740 in revenue increases and $256,940 in expenditure increases. The details of these requests are on attachments A, B, and C, and I'm here to answer any questions you have. Mayor Irons, I'd like to ask your permission to allow Measure Q committee member Barbara Spagnola to present the district transaction tax report at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. That would be great. Ms. Spagnola? Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara Spagnola, Measure Q Committee, the Citizens Oversight Committee. Good evening, everybody, and I'm here tonight to present a summary report of the more detailed report that our committee submitted to you in early January, which I believe the detailed written report is in your agenda packet of information. Basically, what I wanted to do is just summarize at a very high level. The committee met in December 2012 to review all the Measure Q expenditures and revenue. And the total revenue, this is for the previous fiscal year, let me be clear, that's 2011-2012, ending June 30th, 2012. The total revenue for that fiscal year was $976,000. The majority of that was received from Measure Q and includes taxes, interest, and some investment gain. 100 of the Measure Q funds were used to service the vehicle debt. That was the final year. The LaserFish software upgrade, that's a software package that needed to be upgraded, that's used to communicate with the district attorney's office, and the purchase of 3 ballistic vests, which are a mandatory requirement. 65,000 of the Measure Q funds were budgeted for the communications tower, which subsequently has been determined that that is no longer needed. And so our committee recommended that that $65,000 go through the formal budget process and be reallocated to other police needs in the current fiscal year, which I'm sure Susan will be addressing in the report immediately following mine. Police Department, and then let me go on to the Fire Department. The Measure Q funds have contributed to the construction of the new fire station, also enabled the funding of the fourth firefighter. I believe that's the emergency vacation relief firefighter. And that's also an OSHA requirement, the four firefighters. What we our committee has recommended for the fire department funds, number one, a detailed financial summary of the construction project be done as soon as possible in the near future, and since the physical building has been completed. And determine whether the second USDA loan in the amount of $300,000 is actually needed or that could be retired. We don't want to obviously recommend retire that loan until you're sure that it won't be needed, but that was the feeling of the committee. So a more detailed report would be a good way to determine that. And thinking about that $300,000 loan, that equates to about $500,000 in cost avoidance if you factor in the cost of accrued interest. So, any questions on police and fire? Slide three, please. Okay. The street maintenance, I'm sure that's all good news to everybody. The Measure Q funds were used for the street repairs, including the cross gutter, construction, tree work, et cetera, everything as identified in the city's pavement management plan. Our committee recommended on that the $166,000 unallocated amount from the last fiscal year, the one I'm discussing here, be reallocated to next year's fiscal year, 2013 to 2014, plus any excess funds from this current fiscal year also be reallocated to next year's fiscal year for the street maintenance. And the only other suggestion we had for street maintenance funds is that those signs that were prepared, created about 2 years ago, be prominently displayed whenever the street repair work is being done. There was some question, I think, and discussion among the committee members that some of the signs weren't being used. So that's why that recommendation is in there. And then finally, I'll get to the storm drains. Measure Q funds were used for some minor storm drain projects. The carryover balance from the storm drain in Measure Q from this 2011-12 fiscal year is now $445,000. And that's because actually one of our members, Mr. Glessman, did some additional research on that. But as it turns out, in the storm drain management plan from, I believe, maybe 1987, there were several projects, forget what it was, maybe 26 or so, that were recommended to be done that were never done, two of the major projects. That details in the report. So because of that, we have a significant balance. And so what we are recommending is that the that carryover amount be transferred to the pavement management plan. And that's not to say that we wouldn't recommend that storm drain work be done with those funds, but we think it should be all funded together in street maintenance so that there would be a better coordination of fixing the storm drains that are in close proximity to the street repair work that's being done. So basically, we think that would be a better use of your capital funds. And for instance, if there were a storm drain that needed repaired 1 year, you wouldn't want to do that and then 2 years later be repairing the street nearby. So you may have to use, or we may suggest you would use a priority for some of the storm drains to the street repairs so that they're done at the same time. So. And then also annually budget approximately $30,000 of the Measure Q funds for the storm drain community outreach program. That's the average expenditures, I believe, for the last 6 years. So, any question on these two categories?
You're doing great, thanks.
Good. Okay, then in conclusion, slide four.
Only three major points there. Number one, the revenues for this fiscal year that we examined have been spent consistent with the guidelines of the 2006 ballot.
George, Christine, Nancy, Noah. Thank you very much, Measure Q Committee, for a very thorough report and your service and being so diligent in managing those funds and making sure they're managed properly. Thank you.
Trying to do that. Thank you. And thanks to Susan, who's been very instrumental in helping us with the budget information.
Thank you for
thanks
that.
Thanks for your attention.
Thanks, Susan. And with that, this is a... do we have any other questions for Susan for this?
Was she going to continue with the report?
Are you done? You're done with your report.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was actually looking forward to a little more of a review of the highlights. I could certainly ask some questions to draw that out. Whatever you prefer.
Go ahead. Let's get started there.
Okay. Let me get to here. So, Ms. Slayton, there's a couple of things going on with our different funds, and I'm noticing some trends that I think have been going on for a while now as far as the number of years, but I'm thinking specifically of contractual services. And as I look through each of the different departments and funds, I don't know if it seems like this last year was more than we've ever had, but or if that's the case, but it really felt like that as I was looking at the numbers. And I found myself thinking about this as I looked at each of the departments that I, for the most part, knew where each of those were coming from. But I felt like from the public's perspective, it's probably really hard to track where those contractual services are being spent and who they are. And I was wondering about the idea of some sort of a tracking method that actually reports our contractors in relation to those line items to and showing the total funds that were allocated to those different firms as a general informational item. And I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Thank you, Councilmember Smuckler. That's a very good idea. This is something that I can do if this is what council would like to see with mid-year or even at budget time. I can give you a report that we have called a detailed transaction report. It gives the vendor name. It gives the amount that that person was paid at that time. It's something, a report that I can take and bring it into Excel and put all of one vendor's transactions together so that you can see everything that person was paid in that fiscal year or that period of time. So that's something that can be done very easily.
Okay, thank you. I think that would help. Just looking at the volume there that is being utilized and spent. The other thing I just wanted to you've outlined some concerns that you have. But I did want to give you that chance to talk about some red flags that you see, what you think some of the bigger challenges will be over the next quarter of the year, getting to our budget cycle, and really elaborate a little more on some of the key challenges that you see ahead for us.
One of the biggest things that I've seen in our budgets, and that just has to do with the fact that we have been keeping our budgets at such a restricted level that we've not completely allowed for certain services that have gone up, things that we don't have any control over. Electricity goes up, contractors have increases in their you know, budgets or their contracts with us, like our maintenance contract with our software went up by 7%. These are the kind of things that we are having to struggle to fit them into our budgets as they sit now, because we've had some tight times and our revenues have not been performing as we had hoped they would. They're getting better, and our budgets were able to stretch a little bit. But when you add in increasing costs from our PERS retirements and, you know, some of our contracts that, you know, and other expenses that have just increased that we don't have any control over. Gas has fluctuated all over the place this year. So there are a lot of things that we don't have control over that we've had to absorb within a tight budget already, and we're really struggling with it. It's been very tough. Overall, with the budgets as tight as they were at the end of that we set for the 12-13 year, we've done a remarkable job. And the department
feels like we're running a race that you're never really kind of, you're never getting to the finish line. And I guess that stood out to me more in this mid-year than ever before, because for so long we've been struggling with an economy that, you know, you automatically feel like, okay, we're not, our expectations are going to be low going in. And, you know, this is the first time since I've been on the council where you actually felt like, okay, maybe we're making a little headway, and then of course we run into these additional expenses and challenges. So I think that's just reality, but it's a good reminder. I'm going to pass at this point and go through my notes a little more. Maybe have a few more questions.
Nancy?
I have a couple, and Susan and I discussed these via email earlier, but I understand what Mr. Smuckler over here is saying, yet you're increasing the Measure Q fund sales tax revenue, yet our other sales tax revenue has gone up. Why are we not showing that more? I mean, you mentioned the price of gasoline, which has gone tremendously high, and our gas stations in town are just packed with people because we have the best prices in the area. So why are we not looking at revenue from our general fund? And while you're at it, if you could talk a little bit about the TOT increase. It is already more than you budgeted last year, and based on TOT reports this year, it could end up as much as $200,000 more than last year. So why are we not looking at these sources of income?
Thank you, Councilmember Johnson, Nancy Johnson. Yes, we did communicate back and forth with the council members about this. The general fund's sales tax estimate is, and as well as Measure Q, is something that I get from our consultant, Hinderleiter, DeLamas and Associates. And when I spoke with the HDL consultant, they had given me an amount for sales tax, and they gave me an amount for Measure Q at the beginning of the fiscal year, prior to the when I was budgeting. And the amount that they gave me for our sales tax just didn't quite work. It was a little lower than what I felt experience, you know, predicted, so I went with my prediction. And Measure Q, I went with theirs. And one of the things that they had talked to me about at the time that that I met with them was that gasoline prices were so volatile. They were going up, they were going down. You know, they weren't real comfortable predicting increases in our sales tax, and they felt that our Measure Q was pretty much going to stay, you know, flow with sales tax, and not, you know, nothing exciting was going to happen. When I met with them in January, they brought me a new estimate for Measure Q and said they've had, you know, quite some surprising new car sales. Seems like people are really getting out there. They're buying cars. And so they predicted a $36,000 increase in Measure Q, but they said with the regular sales tax, it's really not doing the same thing. And so they're not really predicting an increase in our sales tax base here. They're predicting an increase in outside sales where people are going to car dealers and they're buying cars. And, of course, they're registering their car as living in Morro Bay, so we get that district transaction tax. The two of them aren't working well together, you know, aren't working together. They're not in parallel. So that's why with the sales tax, Measure Q went up, but our regular sales tax didn't. And right now it's pretty much tracking about where I think it's going to be. I think I'm going to hit it either right on the head or maybe a little bit higher. I won't be too far off on that one. Measure Q is really coming in well, and that's kind of exciting because that means that we're going to have more money to dedicate to, maybe to our streets. The other thing that you mentioned was TOT. TOT, I get very concerned about TOT. I am, and I will always tell you that I am a very conservative budgeter. And my concern with TOT is that TOT can be very volatile. If I predict that TOT is going to come in at $2.1 million this year, and it does, and we spend at that level, and next year I say it's very likely to come in at $2.2 million, and we spend at that level, we'll start increasing our budgets. And then all of a sudden, TOT doesn't happen. And how do we make that up? So I try to allow for increases to our budgets, but not astronomical increases, because there may be other revenues that don't perform. And I just get very nervous about they were required to pay them out for their accrued vacation, for their accrued floating holiday, and comp time. Those are all compensable leaves that we have to pay, as well as admin leave if they're in a classification to receive that. Anyone who is retiring can request a certain amount of their sick leave to be paid out to them. So we can have a significant amount of money that comes out when someone retires, or even when somebody leaves. They don't necessarily have to retire, but when they leave. We've also offered a service retirement incentive for the last few fiscal years, and that's been at $10,000, and we had four employees take advantage of that. So that gave us about almost $80,000 in just retirement payouts, not to mention the fact that we had some police officers that left, and we had some payouts for their accrued, their required accrued leaves that we had to pay out. So we had some pretty hefty numbers. Now for the upcoming year, we have, I just learned today that we've heard about one retirement that could possibly be, popping up on the radar screen, maybe two. The second one is a big maybe. The first one is, I might be retiring in the next year. That's all we've heard. So might have a couple of them.
Thank you. That answers a lot of questions. I just have one other, and that I'm still not clear on what this other pay is. It's not related to retirement, and it's $21,500. So what is other pay?
Every year in December, we pay out all of the excess accrual amounts. So if I have the ability to accrue vacation at up to 400 hours, and I do, but I actually kept accruing because there's no mechanism for me to stop accruing. And at the end of December, maybe I had 430 hours. I'm going to get paid for those 30 hours to get my accrual down below $400. And we do that every year. Every employee group has that in their MOU, and that's what we do. The only group that doesn't have that ability to continue accruing is our police department. Their MOU specifically states that when they reach their maximum vacation, they stop accruing. So it's not as if that's it. They don't accrue anymore until they use their balance down below the accrual limit, and then they can start accruing again. So that's what those are. Those are the excesses in admin leave, or not admin leave, I'm sorry, floating holiday, comp time, and vacation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Nancy. George, you have any questions?
No, I don't have any questions. I always see this same thing, and it always bothers me, is all these overtime pays. I'm just a sticker on that, and it bothers me. I understand how it happens. That's the way it goes.
Okay, Christine?
I don't know if Ms. Slayton wanted to comment on that at all, or
Mr. on Councilman Ling's comment.
We have had a lot of overtime in our police department based on the fact that we've had some individuals that left. We lost three officers in a period of a week, and so we had to make up, you know, people had to, you know, take some extra shifts, do overtime to cover for those losses until we can fill those positions. I believe we had some issues in the fire department as well. And I think those are really the two. I don't think, I think there's something going on in the harbor as well because they're missing a harbor patrol officer. Other than that, I think everything was okay. But those, yeah, we did have some overtime, and it was unfortunate. But we just didn't have people to cover. So we cover with overtime.
Okay, thank you. I just had one thing to discuss and get your feedback on, Ms. Slayton. Through reviewing the items at this point, I saw that there was some vehicle replacement going on. And I think I think it might be interesting for the members of the public to hear a little bit about how Morro Bay deals with vehicles that have reached the limit that the city declares is it, and then how we decide on that.
Thank you, Councilmember Christine Johnson. With our vehicles, what we do is at this time we don't have a formal vehicle use policy, but it is something that is in the works, vehicles until they can't be used anymore. Once our mechanic says that the vehicle is done, that it's not safe to drive, or to repair it to make it safe to drive is just not, it's too costly, then we send it off to auction. And we've been getting some pretty good proceeds from our auction company, so it's been good. We usually don't trade them in unless we're in a position where we have a car that's that everybody's got a good car. And usually that doesn't happen. So we pretty much pass them around.
Okay, thank you. And then we talked about the possibility of having a policy on vehicles maybe by September. Does that seem likely for the city to have that?
If council would like us to move the vehicle use policy up to, up a bit, then that's something that we can definitely work on.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Susan. Thank you for the report. I had a couple questions in regards to the overall amendment and the request for the amendment. And my request would be for council as well to help decide on this is looking for additional funds out of this. So the request for this total amount, I guess what I want to talk about is not fully funding your request and looking for an additional $25,000 or $30,000. And, I know we have on our council agenda item, we have an item that has to do with management partners consultant report, and which is going to cost approximately $30,000. And I'm looking at that on how we're going to fund that, because what we're seeing here is beyond what this amendment is. We don't have any funding to support this management partners update if that was going to be agreed on tonight. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. In addition to, all that was discussed tonight, which that was very, very informative for everyone, I would just like to discuss with my colleagues on council the question on whether or not we would really fully fund what your amendment is, and just ask that we continue this and give you the opportunity to come back to see if you can find that additional monies for us. So can you comment on that?
I can tell you that if the amendments to the general fund are not done, the general fund will go over budget at the end of the year. Right now we're at 52% spent, and these adjustments get us down to about 49%. So those adjustments will at least get us back into a little comfort zone. That said, if council wants to task me with the job of finding $30,000 for the management partner study, if council decides to do that, I would be happy to do that and see what I can find and report that back through the city manager and then ultimately bring it back to council.
And for that matter, it would just be whether or not the management partners update would even be approved. I think it's just the option of seeing what the opportunity is of finding, stretching things out just a little bit to see if we can find an additional $25,000 or $30,000, because realistically, without that, we, you know, anything that we want to discuss that costs money, we don't have. Everything is budgeted.
That's you're correct. There's no contingency in the general fund budget
unless we go into the reserve.
Correct. When we put it together, what I budgeted in revenues, we budgeted in expenditures, and so there's no contingency that's built into that. If for this particular year, for the 12-13 year, there's not going to be much room for something like that. That would be something that maybe for the 12-13-14 budget, we may be able to look at something that council could say that they want a 0.5% of the general fund as a contingency for these kind of expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
That would give about $50,000, $60,000 for these various kind of things.
Okay, thank you. Well, those are my comments. I'd bring it back to the rest of council for discussion on my thoughts or any other thoughts that might be out there. That's probably how she'll find it.
It's a rainbow.
Christine, any comments?
I just, the idea of having a contingency, I think this might be a question for Ms. Slayton, though. Not part of the discussion. So,
okay,
is that,
right? That in regard to the contingency
yes.
fund?
Yes.
Good question.
May I ask
yes,
that?
Yes, please. Thanks.
So, just a little philosophy for this is my first time going through the budget, and I'm sure many people at home may have the same question. So, your philosophy on having a contingency for our future budget, I know we can just, you don't have to spend a lot of time on it now. I'm sure we'll talk about it in the future, but that would be a benefit, and we didn't do it. There is not a contingency here, but you would suggest that for the future?
There's no contingency built into the 12-13 budget. If council wanted to do something like that and have a small set aside of the general fund where instead of me budgeting all the revenues with all the expenditures, if they wanted to reserve a certain amount and say this should be set aside for various projects, you give me a target amount and I can do that. And then we take that out as a line and just say, you know, budget contingency, and we would hold on to that.
Okay, thank you. That's nothing further.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Going back to my earlier question about TOT and revenues, it seems to me that they are much higher than they've been budgeted. And while I certainly understand what you say about not wanting to plan on that for years to come, it sounds like there's a bit of a cushion there. Should we need $50,000 for something? You have it kind of tucked away already, right?
In that regard, there is a cushion with TOT because obviously TOT has been performing better. One of the things that I get concerned about are other revenues that don't perform. We've had a lot of trouble with state, with our state grants. We've had a lot of different things going on, and so I get very nervous about budgeting high in certain areas, and then all of a sudden I get to the end, and you know something else hasn't panned out, and that's there is. There will be extra TOT. There might be a little less property taxes. Sales tax is probably going to hit right on the head. you've got, you know, a little bit of gray area with our natural gas because the power plant's not running at all, hardly at all anymore. And electricity, Charter, of course, I did lower the estimate on that because our charter revenue is not coming in as much as we had expected. There are just some things, and then, of course, our user fees. We never know how they're going to perform until we pretty much get, you know, three-quarters of the year through. So I always like to have a little bit extra that I can count on to cover those revenues that don't perform. But I'm sure we could squeak about $30,000 out of there.
Yeah, go ahead, Don.
Thank you. That actually brought up one of the questions I had here is for Mr. Woods regarding electricity, and if you could review a little bit about with the energy efficiency upgrades and retrofits we've done, what you're seeing there, and if you're thinking about additional ways for us to reduce the energy costs for the city.
Certainly, I'll do my best, Councilman Smuckler and Council. In the last year and a half, 2 years, we've implemented quite a few energy-saving policies and procedures within our facilities as well as parks, changing out light ballasts and lights to higher efficiencies. We've gone to LED lights and all the exterior lighting of our parks and parking lots. We've got better efficiency in as far as our water regulation and monitoring. And a couple of our test sites right now have seen a reduction of anywhere between 20% and 30% of utilities used. We should have a pretty good overall number of our revenue savings or expenditure savings at the end of the fiscal year. Right now we're looking at somewhere in the mid 20% savings. We went fairly conservative on our estimates as expenditures. They remained the same from the previous year. We knew that we were going to drop down a little bit below those expenditures, but we wanted to be cautious to make sure that the policies and the types of systems that we put in place were going to be beneficial and would be able to sustain themselves at a particular lower rate than previously budgeted. So our hopes that we see some significant savings this year, and we will project them in order to get those established. Capital could be generated from a decision in your next year's budget or particular loans at various interest rates. I think there's one program out there about 1%. So we would be targeting the bigger ticket items, which is the HVAC units. Cost recovery is a little bit further out than other types of expenditures. The lighting is a little bit cheaper to put in, and the efficiency is a little bit more realized at a quicker rate. So we would project those out for you as we looked at those particular units. But they're typically the larger units, the type of efficiencies that we're looking at, probably 7, 8 years, 9 years on the return. So it's a little bit further out than some of the lighting, which is between 2, 3, and 4 year returns.
Okay, thanks. And to Mr. Leifick, if you can update us on the street maintenance contract, do you anticipate that's been allocated? So at this point, we're just waiting for the initiation of that contract.
The 2012-2013 contract is nearly complete, so we're preparing the list of streets to go out for the this year's allocation of funding. Yes, that's correct.
And do you know a timeline with that?
We're probably looking to go out to. We're doing the reinspection of the north. The red zone, as it were, the north area of town, to reevaluate the different maintenance techniques on that area. So we anticipate that being completed within the next couple weeks, then probably a month to prepare a bid package. So going out mid-spring, so probably and towards the end of April, first part of May, for that bid package.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We had a couple other discussions about policy for vehicle and detailed transaction report, which would probably fall under future agenda items if we were to pursue something like that. That's the only thing else that came out of the discussion, with the exception of if there were agreement to continue this and see if Ms. Slayton could find the rainbow and see if we can find some extra funds.
How much money can we invest in lottery tickets?
So if I could just confirm, you did say the detailed transaction report, which has to do with the contracting?
Yes. Not something that we would discuss with this item. This would be, that would be a future agenda item. Wouldn't that be correct? As far as just looking for some direction on this, because anything other than what's on the agenda item as far as policy for vehicle use or detailed transaction report would fall under a future agenda item. Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to bring that.
If I could though, my thought with that is it's really an informational component to this report or any budget report, a glossary of definitions for what each term means, and it's, to me, it's just an expanded piece of information about this very report, so I'm not sure it necessarily needs to be a future agenda item. My suggestion was that it becomes a component of these budget reports to help us track the funds.
Okay,
but
is that something
that's my interpretation?
Okay. All right, good. Seems like that would work, with the exception of a vehicle policy. That's something that would probably come back. Okay. All right, good. Then I would venture a motion.
There's actually two policies that I want to make sure we're clear on. One is a vehicle usage policy that we've been working on, which is basically, as an employee, when you're using a vehicle policy, what are the rules and regulations established for that? And then I think more with a budget, you're talking about a vehicle maintenance and how we replace them as opposed to the vehicle usage. And I don't know if we're anywhere along with a vehicle maintenance policy, but if that's something we can put on as an item that needs to be done. So there are two different policies, and I think you were talking to clarify the maintenance one.
Correct.
Okay.
Vehicle maintenance or vehicle replacement policy, or the same thing? Same thing.
Hi.
Okay.
Yes, not usage, more like what, yes, end of life situation.
Got it. Okay, just trying to capture everything. Then I'd venture a motion to, and any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None? Okay, motion carries. Thank you, Ms. Slayton. On to item D2. Thank you, Measure Q Committee. D2. Mr. Woods?
Certainly. Good evening, Mayor and Council. D2 is the empty lot on Shasta and Dune Street. The lot was purchased back in 1995. It had some existing residential houses on it. The plan was to acquire, as I recall, more of that business lot or corner or block, if you will, for the development of a civic center. In the interim, in the hopes of getting raising revenues, the city put those particular properties in the rental sphere and began managing them as rental properties. As the Civic Center plans basically didn't develop, the properties continued to be rented, and so deferred maintenance accumulated and came to the position where it was to the point where we needed to make a decision on those properties. Staff brought a report to the City Council on October the 11th, 2011, in hopes of a decision either to invest in those properties or to do something different would be to level them, to demolish them, and look for improvements in the future. We were directed to demolish those particular structures and prepare the lot for a community garden or pocket park. Prior to demolition to those properties, they were made available to the police and the fire departments. They did extensive training at both of those sites, which is definitely a valuable exercise for both departments. And anytime we get those opportunities to do police and fire training on derelict on buildings, we tend to do that. After those training exercises were complete, we came in and cleared the lot. We prepared it as directed, which was to clear it of all building remains. We put bark mulch down to keep the weed abatement, and we did provide a water source in the corner of the lot. This particular property was reviewed by the Recreation Parks Commission on January the 17th of 2013. Their review was basically to look at the particular area in hopes developing either a community garden or a pocket park, if you will. Staff provided one initial drawing. It's in your packet. It's called it's park number one. Basically, I think it's community park or Shasta Park. There's various names there. But basically, I'll be referring to them as one, two, three, four, and five. Number one was initiated just for the sake of conversation and dialogue at the commission. It was definitely talked about, and their recommendations at the conclusion of their discussion are as outlined. They were asking you to consider to provide fruit trees, flower gardens, and also picnic tables, include some sitting benches, provide walking paths to these amenities, definitely use local artists to provide some of the form of public, some form of public art in this location. Use these local artists, if we could, to design a water feature with consideration of perimeter seating, and also provide an interactive and functioning elements within the design. So they've taken this particular basic concept to the next level and really developing and putting in some foresight into a community pocket park. And so we were the recommendation from Recreation Parks Commission, as Commissioner Sedaris has said earlier, is not to go into the community gardening, but also but definitely go into the avenue of a community pocket park. And basically the pocket park has two different ways you can look at this. It's more of a temporary park, where it's illustrated in your design one and five. And then also more of a permanent park with a little bit more detail, and as the commission was be looking for, a more permanent park would have water features and amenities that were for a little longer term and duration. Staff provided you with those drawings. There's one through five. You may make notice that there is no trash receptacles at this particular location, and there's various reasons because of the impact on maintenance. But we're
bring it back to council. I beg your pardon.
I was wondering when it would be a good time to ask for Mr. Sedaris to comment.
I was going to bring it back to council. That's okay.
My fault.
And then and see if
looks
we had any
there.
If see if anybody had any questions for him. But George, you have any questions?
Well, if we pardon rip on somebody like they were suggesting to put in a little pocket park there, we'd be kind of married at the hip with these people, right? Like 4-H, or if I mean, why was this lot bought for in the first place? Was it something to be used in the future for the city for development?
During a period of time that the city purchased that property, the property next to it, and was actually trying to purchase another property because it was going to be developed as the civic center, the city center, put police there also, and public service, and all of the administration, but it never came to fruition. So that was the reason why I bought it in the first place.
So that's why it was bought in the first place. Now, like I said, if we want to continue on this in the future, we wouldn't be able to do this if we join up and put a pocket park in there with 4-H or whoever they were talking about. garden club.
Well, I mean, any agreement has termination clauses in them that you can do, but in reality, I mean, yes, sometimes when uses are put into a certain use, then the public does expect it to be that use forever.
But right now, everything else is on hold. We found out we don't have any money anyway. So everything's going to be put on hold as far as Civic Center.
Christine, any questions?
Not at this time, thanks.
Nancy?
Well, as one of the major proponents of this area, this pocket park, I have a lot of comments and discussion, but I don't have any questions at this point.
Thank you. Noah?
I don't have any questions either, just comments.
You want to? Well, let me. I have some questions before you get going with the comments then. And basically, I guess part of it will come back to Nancy and George, since you were on council during this took place. And I guess the question is also, and Noah, thank you. Sorry to leave you out on that, Noah. And the discussion of the choice between having a park versus selling the property, was that ever in the discussion? No. And that wasn't something that was considered at that time? No. Okay. All right. And then that's some of the only questions I have for now. I'll turn it over for comments if you want to lead off, Nancy.
Yes. This was an idea that I brought forth as an agenda item, and I think Mr. Smuckler over here was in favor of it. I've had extensive talks with the Morro Bay Garden Club as a member and with the 4-H gardening part of their organization. We fully understood going into this that it would be possibly a temporary situation, since the piece of property is designated as part of a future civic center. Who can define future? Not me. But in the meantime, we were talking about something simple. It kind of got a little more complex when it went to the Rec and Park Commission, wanting to add water features, etc. We were basically talking more about number one, and just a little more background of this. Years ago, Neil Farrell from the paper suggested fruit trees in town so people could stop and pick fruit. And so we kind of grew with that idea of apple trees and a lemon tree. And I'm not really clear on what the trees would be by the hedge. I know that Taylor Newton, who's the head of 4-H Gardening Club, had some suggestions for over there. In terms, we've talked with Mr. Wood about providing walkways and benches. He has up to 4 picnic tables and benches, but we were talking about just starting with 2 to get it started. Using local artists, we've talked with the Morro Bay Art Foundation about maybe putting a mural on the fence that would be behind the apple trees. The apple trees have already been secured, a little prematurely maybe, but I'll plant them someplace else. Joe Sable from the Rare Fruit Growers of California has agreed to come and teach the Garden Club how to graft the trees at no cost for this area. We're also hoping to find a design with Mr. Woods, of course, in his department. We're thinking now flower beds with, of course, dahlias in them. But since dahlias only bloom in the spring, those would be in the fall, those would be overplanted with things like daffodils and things like that, bloom in the spring. The other thing we're looking at, I've talked to Mike Bush out at the Botanical Garden about donating some Mediterranean plants. So I think this can be done at very little expense to the city and be a really nice situation for our Morro Bay citizens. And with that, I'm going to stop for now.
Thank you, Nancy. I think Noah had some comments as well.
Yeah, thank you. And I am definitely in support of moving forward with this, understanding that it is indeterminate as far as the temporary nature of it, but I wouldn't see us moving forward with any sort of a civic center, definitely within the next 5 years, and very likely even much further than that. And I think this corner would really benefit from it, particularly where it's in relation to all the other parts of city center and things that we have going on around there. And I really like the direction that the Garden Club's going in with this. My feeling on our direction tonight should be as much in deferral to the Garden Club's ideas, taking the Parks or Rec and Parks Committee's input into account, because you know if they're going to be adopting it, they really need to be bought into the concept and excited about their commitment and participation. So I think the things that you mentioned there, particularly I had add another avocado at least, and I'm not an expert on avocados, but we have done a number of smaller plantings, and yes, the flowering types are really important, and it would be interesting to talk to some of our local ranchers who are probably equipped to at least help us identify what type of avocado we might have there. It might just be a volunteer, which gives you from a pit, which gives you a lot of different variants. And I love that Mr. Sable is going to be involved. I had a couple of suggestions off of the design, mostly based on the solar orientation, and I'm in preference to number 1 and 5 as well because of its simplicity and also because I think it maximizes the use. And one of my suggestions was just with the western border, you have the apples there, and considering that's probably the hottest spot in the whole lot because of the winds being blocked by the buildings and the fence, you might want to shift the apples to the northern area, the northern border, just to take advantage of a little more shade, a little more coolness, and then get your heat levers where you have the apples. That was just one suggestion. The other was that I have talked to some of the tree committee members in the past about this, and then recently, and were the volunteer tree committees willing to participate and help with the installation, and we have a meeting scheduled in March that we're planning on talking about this, so we don't mind working our resources into the installation effort and helping as much as we can. So, oh yeah, dig holes. We love digging holes. And I definitely like the idea of using these picnic tables to really create the space, the intention of people coming and resting and enjoying it. So that said, definitely easy to maintain and trying to limit the amount of watering that's going to be required. I think you have that going on. And definitely working with as much volunteer and donation opportunities as possible.
Down this end, George, do you have any suggestion on the north-facing trees at all?
Well, yeah, I really think the apple tree should be moved closer to the back. Well, you know. Anyway, well, I sure like the idea that other people are going to do this, and my comment would be no cost to the city would be real nice. We're donating the property. Thanks. Go for it.
Thanks, George. Christine?
I think it's great to have a collaboration. I spoke with Director Woods before, and that's what makes these things successful, is to have a dedicated community organization. So that's the commitment level is there, it sounds like, from your two groups at least. And then I would just like to make sure we have a good plan for trash and recycling, and then ensure that is the community group in charge of picking up trash and recycling? What's been the policy before with Adopt a Park? So I think that it was, sounds like it's going to be beautiful, so obviously we want to make sure it's tidy. And then last thing is it would
the type of plants that the Garden Club is looking for are going to be probably fairly drought tolerant and pretty much water misers. So not too concerned about the water cost at this time. We feel that the community benefit is going to outweigh the costs that are going to be associated with developing this particular area.
I guess it was my understanding that fruit trees and avocado trees were rather thirsty and consumed quite a bit of water. No, do you have comments on that at all?
My comment on that would be that it's all relative. Compared to a lawn, much less water, and particularly with mulch in our area on the coast. I would agree with Mr. Woods' assessment is that it would be minimal.
Okay.
And actually, the avocado tree that is absolutely huge and growing there right now gets no water at all from the city. So,
well, I would say
getting it somewhere, but we're not buying it.
I would say I don't think there's an avocado on Shasta Street that actually produces avocados.
There's one on Morrow Avenue. And one on Market Street.
I'm just saying for Shasta Avenue. That's just, it's just, it's on my street.
Sorry. See, now you can
see the street. What are we doing with this thing?
Yeah. You know, Daryl, Drew stayed, you know, throughout this. I just offer him, some time to comment on this. He stuck through seeing this through. Did you get all your comments on public comment?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, good. All right, Drew. All right, thanks, Drew. Thanks for sticking through this. Go ahead.
Mr. Sedaris just pointed out that the benches are going to be repurposed benches that were in another city park and have been recently replaced, so they're available for free at no cost. Tables.
Okay. Do I hear a motion then?
What are we motioning on that?
I got to be clear
on this. We're not selecting a thing here, are we? A plan?
No. I think what we want to do is move that we move this forward.
Okay.
And I'm not really clear as to where that goes. I know the garden. My guess would be that the Garden Club and the 4-H would need to come back with a much more detailed plan. And then do we take that to Rec and Parks, or do we take it to you, Mr. Woods, or do we just start digging holes?
So I think if we're going to be entering into some sort of agreement, we're going to have to make a motion and approve this. But Mr. Schultz, Ms. Luker, can you comment on that?
Actually, I was going to say that we currently have an Adopt-a-Park agreement, a format that we've used it successfully. So I would assume that Mr. Woods would enter into an Adopt-a-Park agreement with these groups. I don't believe that needs to come back to City Council. I think you can give him direction tonight with a motion. The only thing I would ask, if you are amenable to it, is in your motion include some wording that it is a temporary facility, because when we do get to that Civic Center site and we go back to the motion, it would be great to have that kind of wording in within your motion, if you're willing to do that.
Oh, yes. Thank you for the clarity. So there's also some, as far as being specific on direction, I know there's some mention on the Garden Club participation, Tree Committee, Rec and Park Committee. I don't know if the Art Foundation, if you want to craft a motion with all that on what you'd like to see, that'd be great, Nancy.
Well, let me give it a try. I'm not sure I want to include, let's see. I move that we proceed with this Community Pocket Park project, basically with the Morrow Bay Garden Club, the 4-H Garden Group, and the Public Arts Foundation, to develop a plan and to work with Mr. Woods to follow the guidelines of the Adopt-a-Park program, understanding that this could be a temporary situation.
Perfect.
So second.
I will second it. I think we could have done this in 5 minutes.
Okay, we've got a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. On to D3.
Yeah,
Thank you. Just for clarity, can you repeat the available candidates, please? Sorry.
Absolutely, and I'm hoping that you brought your applications with you, but those four applicants that were not appointed are Deborah Owen, Stuart Skiff, I believe it's Elion Wilson, and Janeth Goldman. And we're asking for you to appoint two of those applicants this evening, if you're so interested.
And at this point, we would go through the same process, just as we did during that, kind of give a piece of paper and do that. Is that you want to go through the same thing, or do you just want us to name?
I would be happy to do the ballot, but if you can just name them, we could short hop that a little bit.
Okay.
Let's get comfortable with that.
All right. Let's.
I was going to nominate Janeth Goldman.
I would nominate Jan Goldman as well. So that's two.
Are we going to take them seat by seat, or two votes at a time?
I'm going to nominate Jan Goldman too. So that's three. Too late.
And you know that's kind of awkward, actually, because usually when you write it down, it's not like publicly. There's any. Yeah.
It's public at the end of the day.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I'm okay with going around and everybody say their two and see how that goes.
So we've got Jan Goldman. Is that right? Okay.
Noah and I get to vote, too.
All right. Yeah. How about we start on your end, then?
I will also vote for Jan Goldman.
Okay, good.
I will vote for. So we're just naming one candidate at this point?
Yeah.
Or are we agreeing on Jan Goldman, and then moving on to the other candidates.
Whatever your first choice will be.
Well, I'll vote for my first choice. That's kind of hard. I'm going to vote for Debbie Owen.
That's an easy name to remember.
I, too, would vote for Debbie Owen.
I, too, will vote for Debbie.
Since you're hesitating.
Oh, I was looking for the name to get it correct. I would vote for Stuart Skiff.
And I would vote for Elion Wilson.
Mm-hmm. And I still have a vote.
Wait a minute. No, this is...
But he gets to vote.
Excuse me. This is where we got mixed up, because you didn't vote. Your first vote with Jan was Deborah Owen. Right? Okay, so now we're on the second round, and we went through and we got Jan Goldman, and so we're on the second round, and we started with Nancy, and
okay.
Nancy started with...
I started with Jan Goldman. He started with Debbie Owen, and then I voted for Debbie.
See, this is... Yeah.
No,
so
you've got four people that have voted for Jan, so I think you can move
forward. We're good on Jan.
And so now you can, I think, what
make our second.
You
vote.
Can do your second, and I've
okay,
got.
Okay, let's. Yeah,
no,
go ahead. Let's start out with our second vote.
Okay, I'm going to vote for Debbie Owen.
Okay.
Second vote. I'm voting for Debbie Owen.
Okay.
Third vote. I'm voting for Debbie Owen.
Okay, that's three. Okay. Go ahead and say who you want to vote for.
Okay, my second vote is for Stuart Skiff.
Okay, and my second vote would be for Elion Wilson. Okay. No.
That was going to be Stuart.
I bet that brings back memories, huh?
Okay, so we got it? Can you repeat
Thank you.
Who
so
those
we,
are, please?
The two candidates, and we've got who voted for who, which will be reflected in the minutes. But the two candidates are Debbie Owen, or I'm sorry, the two new PWEB members are Debbie Owen and Jan Goldman.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Mayor.
Okay, on to item D4, Ms. Luker, discussion and direction on proposal to update the 2008 Management Partner Study. Please. Thank you.
Once again, good evening. In the fall of 2007, the city requested a study be performed to do a number of things, including identify opportunities for improvement at various levels in the city government. The scope of the study included examination of processes and procedures, effectiveness and efficiency of the service of the current service delivery that was provided in 2007, design and staff groups using about 63 individuals, and they also did financial modeling. The report was produced, and it's entitled Assessment of City Organization and Financial Options. And that report that was produced contained, and it can be found on the city's website, it contained 38 recommendations. Overall, there were 21 expenditure control strategies, 13 revenue creation strategies, and 4 long-term, long-range strategies. The document was received in about March of 2008, and the city scheduled their first workshop on that document in August. There was a little bit of a delay there because they were in the process of appointing a city manager as well as dealing with the fiscal year budget. So in August, the City Council had their workshops, and prior to that workshop, the City Council was asked to prioritize prioritize the recommendations that were made on a 1 through 5 basis, and that information was brought back to the workshop, and the council decided what recommendations they would move forward on and what recommendations they would not move forward on. At that point, we followed up with a couple of different workshops and status on the Management Partners programs, with the last being held in August of 2010, I believe. Then the Management Partners recommendations morphed a little bit into the goal-setting workshop. Prior to 2008, the city had not held a consistent goal-setting workshop. So we then continued with our goal-setting workshops, and there haven't been any further requests from City Council for updates on what we've done with the Management Partners recommendations. I would say there was significant work done, and a number of recommendations were followed through on pursuant to the direction of the City Council, mostly related to department reorganization, some elimination of positions, and some different ways of doing services, including looking at different service models such as CAL FIRE. So we have followed through on a number of those. As you'll remember, at the December 11th City Council meeting, Mayor Irons asked that this item be a potential future agenda item to bring back an update on the Management Partners study, and that was supported. I contacted Mr. Belknap, and he has provided the proposal that's attached to your document, and that proposal is fairly self-explanatory about what they would do and how they would handle the update. The cost is approximately $40,000. It's $39,500. And I will note that with the exception of one item in the proposal, I believe the proposal is a good document. But I will note that on the first page of his letter, he states that for the first time in 7 years, the city's general fund is balanced in part due to improved sales tax, TOT, and building revenue fees. And that's just not an accurate statement. So with that exception, I think it's an adequate proposal. I did not make a staff recommendation on this. It was a council item that you asked for us to bring forward. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Andrew. With that, I did ask to bring this back. I bless you. I had reviewed this document and actually remembered this going on when the study was taking place, the input, councils prioritizing, as was explained by Ms. Luker, and a lot of good information on this. So I would be excited about seeing a document like this updated. It would give this council an opportunity to reassess what the city looks like, and just as it did back in 2008, and that really gave the opportunity to explore what kind of opportunities that were there, and I think it's probably healthy for every city to kind of reassess themselves from time to time. So I think it's something that I'm a proponent of, and I would turn it back to comments for council, and I'd start on this side with Nancy.
Well, I discussed this for length, well, not terribly long, but with Ms. Luker yesterday, and she, I think, agreed with me that her office could prepare a report that summarizes the actions that were taken on each one of these items, and even some of the ones where nothing was done, just list those, and which items actually increased revenue or reduced expenses, and give some actual dollar figures. I, especially in our very recent discussion about our tight budget, I find it difficult to spend $39,500 to do this report.
Get those accomplishments, look at the dollar prices, and then to our best degree from the city manager's office, try to take a first stab at what other options may still exist that were carryovers or that are new from 2008. So we could try to keep this sort of an update, which I think is important, in-house at this point, and do that as the first step. Try to do that fairly soon, in the next couple of months. So then if we do want to proceed, we can do that in a timely fashion. I would think something like this would be beneficial for the city to revisit at least every 10 years, but 5 would seem like it'd be more appropriate. Mm-hmm. So it seems like we're right in the time frame to at least do the in-house analysis.
Okay. George?
Without a long conversation about it, yes, I think we should do it in-house first and let them take a look at it and maybe bring back a report to us, and then let's go from there.
Christine?
I echo the sentiments of the other council members about it. I realized when I reviewed the report from 2008 that we have several staff that if they weren't a department head at the time, they're here, so they would have familiarity with the process and the report. You know, if you look at the recommendations on the original part, page 89, some of us will be able to say, sure, that was accomplished, but fleshing it out would be helpful. What I'm thinking now, listening to everyone, is, could we do an in-house review for this fiscal year and potentially go out to bid it in the 13-14 fiscal year after we get through our goals, perhaps? I am uncomfortable with the cost for it now. I think I asked City Manager Luker, and it was about $70,000 or $75,000 originally. So I still think there's a lot of meat on the bone in this report. And I think we can continue to get our money out of it. It seems also many people in the community do mention this report to me when they're talking about the visions for the city, future for the city, or how to cut costs for the city, or what the city's not paying for that they should pay for. Mm-hmm. This gets mentioned a lot. They always say management partners. So I think it has a lot of value to our community. So we want to keep it alive. Mm-hmm. And I think we want to get our $70,000 out of it. And I think, you know, how we can do that tonight sounds like we have some ideas. So thanks.
Okay. Well, so it looks like the majority is in favor of continuing with an update on this. It's just the style in which we want to proceed. So if we were to proceed in-house, that I think it would be important to craft exactly the kind of direction that we would want out of this. So to leave it open-ended, or bring it back and have council review that management partners report in more detail, and then come back with recommendations on areas and direction on how we would want that updated. I think without doing that, I think it would be I think we would that would just be my recommendation if we were to do this in-house. Any other comments? Christine?
I think it's really valuable in the city manager's historical report that this was used in the goal-setting process every year since it's been in existence, mm-hmm. and then even when it morphed into the goals. So it does give us an informal sense of consistency for the things that have been a priority for the city, so I think it's helpful. So I know I will look at it very carefully once again prior to us getting together to set goals, and I'm sure these things are familiar on goal-setting workshops in Morro Bay.
I would just add that I agree. I think bringing it back with more than just the report, here it is, let's talk about it. I'd like to see that update and summary, which I know has for the most part already been generated, but update it to these standards. And I think Christine brings up a good point in that we do have new leadership in different departments. Who have different experiences, and we may shake out some really good ideas from there. I'd like to challenge each department to bring forward, if they feel like an initiative would be of benefit for us to consider, to bring that forward, to make that invitation at some point in this process. And I think we hear a number of recommendations from the community and public as well, and to make sure that that's a component of the process.
So with that, Nancy, did you have any comments? None? George, none?
No.
So to reiterate how we continue with this, that meaning that we would come back with this, and basically the onus would be on us and how we come back.
Where we stand on those recommendations and a little bit of history. I do have a little bit of a concern about the city manager conducting interviews of city and staff,
sure,
and focus groups and
yeah.
such. It's an area that I don't have expertise in. But I think out of all those interviews, what came from all those interviews were those recommendations. So I would update you on where we are with those.
So I guess that's what I'm getting at, is that's your thought on how you would update it, and my question is...
Unless directed differently.
Exactly. So if that's what... If everybody's just comfortable with just reviewing the document and then give us an update on those recommendations, and that's where the majority of this is going, then I think we should speak to that. If there's other specific input that we want, then speak to that. Personally, based on that, I guess I wouldn't, having the input would be, you know, informative, but I guess that wouldn't, I guess we'd have to go there before to see whether or not, I'll ask some other questions, but I guess I don't feel that just updating it with where we stand on the recommendations gets to the meat of the management partner's report. So I know you're ready to pipe in. Just a minute. So with that, if we're just going to do an update based on that, then we'd bring it back, we'd review that, and if we wanted to proceed in the next fiscal year, then maybe we would determine it then. So you wanted to say something, Nancy?
I was just going to agree with Ms. Luker that if she looks at the 38 recommendations, it seems to me, without any more interviews, she should be able to say, and maybe I'm wrong, that yes, this was accomplished, and this is what we saved doing this, or this was not accomplished, or we did this, but we didn't save any money, it was an expense. Just going through the report and being very specific about what's been done and what hasn't been done. And then if we wanted to take it further, when she brings that back to us, then we could look at it and ask questions about the different aspects. But that, to me, seems to be the best approach.
Do you have any questions?
I just had a comment about, I think that what Ms. Johnson just described is definitely the basic foundation of what needs to happen. But I would personally be interested in, when this item returns, that it is informed by at least some discussion with the city manager and each department head at a minimum to evaluate the items that are in the report directly related to their department, and then also to open up the dialogue about other initiatives that may not be in the report that should be at least considered when it comes back to us, so we can determine if that's something that we want to pursue or not.
Can you be more specific with that?
Yeah, basically I think it's important that we open an invitation to the department heads to bring forward new ideas, particularly knowing that we have a number of new department heads, and I think it would be potentially worthwhile for us to explore those options. They may not develop anything new, but I would suspect that there might be some ideas there, and I don't think it has to be anything that's too intensive that the city manager couldn't handle. It would be basically sitting down with each department head and reviewing things that they have on their mind, and in particular to the management partner's focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would help us then determining, okay, what are some of the options for us to go forward?
Any other comments?
So I'm just thinking structure. So how would this be if... Like number one would be the update, and that can be really brief because I think it doesn't have to take a lot of time. But then number two,
update on the 38 recommendations.
Yes, I mean an update, and I mean I think honestly a few sentences. I think most of us get it. If we want more information, we can always ask. And then the second thing, it sounds like what you're asking for, Noah, is then future analysis. So that's the part where you're asking people to take a look at what was said and be creative, or have a new thought, or take. Or continue to promote something. So I don't look at it as being time intensive for our staff. I hope it is not, and I hope we don't, create that for them, direct them that way. But I also have to say, timing wise, I know we're pushed to our first goal session, but it does seem like this would be, let's talk about timing. When would we want this? And given what was already on the plate here.
So that was one of my questions as well, timing. Ms. Luker, could you give us an estimate on what? How much time do you think this would take?
I think we'd be pressed to get it done before, in all.
Subject to make that motion to be able to do that, and I'm asking Ms. Luker. This isn't like it's a different agenda item; it's still within the confines of this agenda. Absolutely, okay. So any. Any motion on that, or would you like me to make a motion on that? Okay, I'll have to make a motion that we update the management partners study from 2008. We would do it in-house. We would the direction would be to update the 38 recommendations with as proposed, I think, would be with the department head input. And we would be looking for April, May for a report on that. Any second?
A second with some discussion.
Discussion?
Yeah, I'd like the motion. I think it could be strengthened if in that section where you said department head input and exploration of additional items would be an important part of that. It would open it up to... going beyond just those 38 recommendations, if it seems worthwhile.
I would amend my motion if I procedure wise, Mr. Schultz, should I just remove the motion and just redo it, or just go ahead and amend it? Okay, we'll amend it as stated. Sounds good. So we amend it as stated. Do I ever hear a second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. On to D5. And this one is council and council policies and procedures. Basically, I took the policies and procedures handbook. You can see the chapter that was redlined. If you open up the very beginning, basically, for the simplicity, I added a table of contents. easy for reading to basically to see what that is all about. And then I went in here and there's a couple of amendment items. I can read through them line by line, but I know everyone's done that. I could actually, I pointed out a couple of errors that I would want to discuss as well. The subject matter is primarily around public comment. There are some, I think, housekeeping items in here as well that, you know, I think, like I say, everybody's read through. There's a tabling procedure that was, I think, cleaned up a little bit and from my perspective. And so I went ahead and made these red line amendments, and I'm proposing it to council for input, comment, and approval. And I'd like to open it up for discussion. Let's send it down to Nancy. Go ahead. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. My first question is on 1.3.3.5 tabling procedure.
Yes.
I would like a little more information from Mr. Schultz about tabling. As I remember, we got ourselves in a bit of a pickle last year by tabling something that we shouldn't have.
And I'm still pissed about it, by the way.
I know you are. So can you explain to us when things can be tabled and not?
I'm going to have to pull
up. Let's come to order on this, folks, and we'll discuss the tabling procedure. I think, I've got the little knuckle wrap going. And
I would have to pull out my Robert's Rules of Order again to look at it, but basically, a table motion should only be done if you want to cut off all debate and kill the whole issue that's on the being discussed. So first, you have to, when you do a motion to table, you're trying to really quash all discussion on the topic, which really should be frowned upon and shouldn't be used at all. And that's why it shouldn't have been used on that time with the situation that occurred. But it was, and that motion then takes precedence and has to be voted on immediately before you can even discuss the other item. And if there is a majority that wants to table it, then there's no further discussion and it's tabled until brought back at a future time. So I believe though in your changes it adequately describes how that occurs.
Thank you.
Which number is it again?
1.3.3.5. On page 14.
Yeah, not frowned upon, but it's, I'm trying to think of the
issues.
It's discouraged. Yeah.
Well, the tabling's on 14. I'm looking for a reconsideration.
That's 11.
Page
11.
Hmm. So we could add that sentence to it to convey that same message. Reconsideration of issues previously acted upon is discouraged. We could add to 14 something similar to that. Tabling of a matter is discouraged. I'm sure you can verbalize that. If we're agreed to that, it would come back for a reading anyway. Okay. Is that agreeable to everybody? Any others, Nancy? Would it be easier if we just go through each one, or do you have a list of them that you want to go through?
Next is not until 1.3.7.3.2, which is on page 155. So if anybody has anything before
page. So, I didn't have it that way. How about, just for the sake of ease, let's just go through the table of contents. Is everybody okay with the table of contents being listed? Okay, good. Then the next one is on page 8, and there's study sessions. There's two items there, one on 1.1.3.1 And then the 1.1.3.3 participation of public shall be at the discretion of the presiding officer is just deleted. It's open to the public, as it states in the study session. Any comments on that? And I have a question for our city attorney on this. If on one point, since the elimination of participation of public shall be at the discretion of the presiding officer, does that automatically insinuate that there will be public comment allowed, or does there need to be a comment to say, let's say at 1.1.3.2, at the end of the sentence where it says advantageous for public participation and public input or comment, does that need to be verbalized in there, or is it understood that public comment is allowed in study session? And if it's a question, and it's just simpler, we should just add it.
We will have public comment period at any of our meetings, as we are required to under the Brown Act. So okay. I think we should put it down there anyway. So, okay. So maybe a little notation to come back with language on that also.
All right. Good.
That brings up another question for me. On public comment, at the beginning of our meeting, we limit speakers to 3 minutes. I've noticed when we've had public comment in closed session, we haven't done that. And I'm wondering if that would apply there and here also, and maybe it should be in writing, if so.
Well, I think with the changes that are being made, that three-minute requirement is being removed.
Even at public comment?
Yes.
At the beginning of the meeting?
The 3 minutes is still in the body of this for our public comment periods.
But would it be extended to other, since we're adding more public comment periods, would that 3 minutes, okay, it seems to me there should be some
place.
Limit.
That's right.
Yeah.
But in the other one, yes, it would apply to both the closed session and the open session.
Any public comment period, since it looks like we're going to have more?
The new language, though, does make it seem that it could be more than 3 minutes in that. If you look on page 18, it says limit comments to 3 minutes until others have had the opportunity to address the council.
We'll address that. I have questions about that one when
okay.
we get there.
So. All right. So we're good on page 8.
I just had a clarification. It did sound like you were suggesting for the study session that there was a limit on public comment. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm requesting that it be limited to 3 minutes. Just as we do with other public comment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my comment would be for the study session. I think one of the ideas with that or other workshops is to expand public comment.
We're allowed 3 minutes unless the mayor determined that a different interval was necessary. You've taken that out and said that it's going to be 3 minutes, but could be longer is the way I interpret it now.
Okay, and that's on page 18.
Right.
Okay, well, we'll look at that when we get to page 18.
Okay. But as for a study session, going back to that, it's supposed to be a very informal, and you're hoping that your facilitator is able to control that just as you two did during the meeting on Friday. I mean, you do have to keep it moving and try to keep the comments going so that everybody speaks.
Get what you pay for.
But I wouldn't try to limit any on those meetings.
Okay.
It's up to the facilitator to do that.
Okay. All right. So are you okay there? Okay. All right. Page 11. 1.2.3. And I have one correction on that. On the bottom sentence where it says during communications, I think that's supposed to be corrected to declaration of future agenda items. That needs to be corrected. Any other comments on that paragraph? We'll proceed to 1.2.6. No comments. Page 12. order of business 1.2.7.4 was that whole order of the agenda and how it's laid out has been changed, as you can see. The mayor, council member reports, announcements, and presentations, and that's our normal announcements. And then presentations, I think that would be, we have presentations every meeting, basically. And so it basically just has a line item for presentations. And then on consent agenda, where it was lined out for public hearings, shall start no sooner than 7 p.m., but we're on consent agenda. Do we need to have the same statement for public hearings on 1.2.7.9?
I mean, that would be up to you. Right now we're taking it out, but that was by your red line. So
okay. That was a mistake. I didn't realize we were taking that out.
Okay.
I mean, it would. So tell me a little bit about why was it at 7?
We've just, before my time even, it's always been we didn't want to start in case someone was coming to the public hearing item. They didn't have to come for that 6 to 7 hour. They knew we were going to start it at 7. If, in fact, we are 6:30 and are done with all our public comment and we're done with consent, we've even gone and jumped forward and rearranged and taken a business item so that they can come at 7. There's no Brown Act requirement for that, and you could just do it and make it flow. And you'd pick it up whenever, but we've always had the 7 p.m.
Any comments on that?
I support that. I think the 7 provides uniformity and assures someone that wants to participate.
So
I think it's very important for people who have issues with the public hearing item to know when it's going to be heard.
Good. So on 1.2.7.9, public hearings, we would include shall start no sooner than 7 p.m. Okay, good. Page 13, 1.3.3.2, added, council members are encouraged to provide questions to staff prior to meetings. The end of that, I don't know exactly why the end of that statement. I would have made a period at the end of meetings, instead of the way it's written in the staff report we have. Do you follow me there? Are you following me on that? So council members are encouraged to provide questions to staff prior to meetings, period. Any comments on that? Page 14, tabling procedure. We just talked about that. So we're going to add the language that is consistent with the got that. And then we're on to page 15, and any comments on that?
I just had one housekeeping comment for the enforcement of order. Change that to unisex. It has a three or a he there on 1.3.9.3.5. 1.3.5.4.1. It says the police chief.
Oh, actually,
the police chief or his designee.
Yeah.
Is the police chief or designee.
What is it? I guess. Something. Explain
it
a
is,
little more.
It, to me, it's what they're doing is explaining the ex parte communications, which we have elsewhere in the policy, but it's kind of being reiterated here that. If you do have any correspondence from a member of the public about an item or you have any oral communications with them, you're supposed to disclose that and provide it as part of the public record. So I think it's being repetitious a little bit because we have our own ex-party policy that we passed separate from this one.
Okay.
Question on that. In reading this, it sounds like any discussion with another council member would have to be explained or
this is actually
council member.
This is actually during a public hearing, so it's not necessarily prior to, but during a public hearing, correspondence between council members or member of the public and the council regarding the public hearing matter being considered by City Council must occur in open, and any communications outside of the notice public meeting on which the council member's decision is based should be disclosed during public meeting. So during the public meeting, correspondence between council members be electronic, or is that this is?
I mean, I'm not sure where it came
yeah,
from.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I.
And I'm concerned. I mean, you certainly could do it, but I mean, I think it's even saying that any communications between one other council member would have to be disclosed, and you're able to have those conversations without violating the Brown Act with one other member. So you might be tying your hands on even having any discussion outside of the open okay. with one other council member.
And we're covered with the ex parte?
For members of the public, yeah.
Okay. All right. So any more comments on this, whether or not to keep this or?
Maybe we can, well, and we can look at it and see what content it was used in from other examples and either remove it or make it clarify correctly what our current procedures are.
Any comments on that from anybody?
That I would like clarification. That'd be great. Because it sounds like it sounds like note passing or text messaging or I don't know.
So come back with clarification on
that
this?
Or yes. Eliminate it maybe because it's really very confusing.
I think the recognition that with the new digital technology that we have, that there are new communication opportunities and making sure that we're clear on what's appropriate and what isn't during hearings or during session with the digital devices isn't important.
It might be that. That's where I'd like to see where the content is. And, you know, maybe there's some other paragraphs we're missing because it might be addressing the situation that we don't address, and that's while you're up on the dais, you shouldn't be using email between yourselves or between the public or between staff without disclosing that. And that might be what this paragraph's trying to get okay. to.
So yeah. We'll come back with clarification
yeah.
on that?
That's okay. I think you're right. That's not when you read it because it says during a public meeting.
Right.
So.
No more texting back and forth.
Page 16, 1.3.6.7 just describes the procedure for a roll call vote, and it's basically at the discretion of the mayor presiding officer. Any comments on that? Okay. And then page 17, 1.3.7 on public comment.
Yes.
Yeah, you have some comments? Okay, here we go. Christine, you want to start first?
I'll defer. Okay. I agreed with Ms. Johnson. To the extent that I think it is important for the mayor to have some discretion and that we strive for 3 minutes, but that in certain situations that might not be attainable. So I would hope that we'd retain that ability. I do really appreciate, though, that you've expanded the public comments period, an opportunity to more items than just the initial public comment as we currently do.
We're not there yet, are we?
I was talking generally.
Okay.
Okay.
But on 1.3.7, I especially like this as a courtesy to council. Citizens are encouraged to present written comments at least 1 week prior to the meeting. I don't know how practical that is because the agenda's not always out, but one of the worst things ever is to be sitting up here and then getting a whole stack of things that people have submitted to you at the last minute. So I don't know if there's a way, maybe just encourage people to do it. I don't know.
My suggestion would be just 24 hours would be great to have. And I'm one of the public speakers. We are definitely in the minority. Probably 15 years ago, it was probably 75%, 25% cities did it the way we currently do it, and slowly but surely most cities have gone to the way that these proposal would be or close to that form. What would we do at the beginning at the meeting when there's public comment period? That would be restricted to or try to restrict it to items that are not on your agenda. So we'd have a specific state in there. This is for public comment period time. These are for agenda for items that are not on the agenda but within the subject matter
of the council. And then we'd go on from there. You'd go into consent calendar, and he would ask, is there any public comment on any of the consent calendars, or does any member of the public want for a consent item to be pulled? Someone could step up and ask for an item to be pulled, or they'd have the time. Then you'd go through consent calendar. Then you'd go on to your public hearing items, if there are any, and then you'd go on to your new and old business. And before each one, he would ask, is there any public comment on this item? That's usually on consent. Obviously, there aren't staff reports, so they have to come up for the beforehand. But on all the other items, staff report would be given first, and then we'd have to ask for public comment. So you probably wouldn't get as much public comment at the very beginning, but now speakers will be able to speak on all the other items. The difficulty comes in, and most cities just allow that to occur unless there's an abuse of that, is if someone steps up and says, I'd like to speak at 6 p.m. because I can't stay here for the rest of the night. You allow that to happen. The only abuse you can see is if they don't leave and if they stick around and then want to have another bite at the apple. So that's basically how we would proceed, and we would then be in the majority of how other cities and counties do it.
So my question would be then, are we limiting public comment on each of these things to the 3 minutes we usually do it?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, yeah.
There's been at least what Councilmember Smuckler said is it would be limited to the 3 minutes or at the discretion of the chair, depending on how much public participation there is.
Right.
And I think that has worked fairly well in previous.
If you can confirm that, though, I don't read that.
That was being taken out. So I think that's what I was asking for, is more direction on putting that back in.
On page 18? Is that? Well, let's finish up. So are we in agreement there? And we'll get to that 3 minute part then.
The way I described it, what you were looking for.
Oh, it sounds, yes. Oh, I needed the description, yes. So in other words, just really briefly, if anyone's still watching, then, and for myself. So the item comes up, the public hearing, and then there's the staff report. And then there's public comment. Do we ask questions prior to public comment, just questions on the staff report, and then public comment, and then discussion?
Usually it's directly after the staff report you get public comment, but you could do your questions first. That's up to the individual jurisdiction, and that's where we could specify how you want it done.
So. That's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
During public hearings, typically we'll take staff report, bring it back to council for
questions first, and then we do
and then turn it over to public comment. Would we not follow that same methodology?
I think so.
Okay. And does that have to be specific in here, or?
I'll look at the public hearing section and see if we say when it's taken.
Okay.
So let me look there.
So so we're pretty good on 1.3.7. The next paragraph below 1.3.7.1. Any comments on that?
Waiting for 733.
Then we'll go over to page 18 and we'll get to the biggie here, 1.3.7.3.3. And Nancy, you have some comments on that.
I do. Okay. So reading this, limit comments to 3 minutes until others have had the opportunity to address the council. Problem number one. Problem number two, the presiding officer with the majority of council members, after all others have spoken, may allow additional brief comments from speakers who have already commented on the same agenda item. That bothers me. I think if you're, number one, I see problems with going back and forth here, and if you're going to allow it, I think the only way it should be allowed would be with the total council approval. I can't see it going with just a majority.
Any other comments?
That's where I thought you'd also want to and limit comments to 3 minutes.
The general intent is 3 minutes. Given some circumstances, I guess for the spirit of the letter of this, if we need that flexibility for a full house and we need to just, hey, look, we've got a full house tonight, let's limit it to 2 minutes. If that's what we need to do, then we need to modify this language to allow us to do that.
I think another point is that you see it happen at the Board of Supervisors, where if you do have a packed house and a lot of comments in line, you could open it up to people speaking for 1 minute first to try to give an incentive.
Mm-hmm.
And also allow people that really need to make a comment but also leave, give them that opening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what you said was limit comments to 3 minutes.
Or as directed
or
by the mayor.
Or as the discretion of the mayor.
Yeah.
That makes it really clear. But now where I have a problem is this part that says until others have had an opportunity to address the council. And with the majority, you're going to allow people to get up more than once if the majority chooses. I, number one, think people should do their comments once and then be seated and let other people comment. But I think if we're going to allow people, and I hate to sound negative, but I've seen it happen in here, where somebody says something, then the other person says something they don't agree with, that so the council agrees with the first person, the majority of the council, they let that first person come back and restate their issues, but then the second person who had an issue doesn't get to come back because he's not in favor with the majority of the council.
Yeah. That,
now, I just think we're opening ourselves to a big can of worms with this one.
You know, I understand that. Instinctively, I think, you know, if you have the time, you know, it wouldn't matter whose comment, you know, if they wanted to come back and forth. But I understand what you're saying. So is there any other comments on that? Christine, do you have any comments?
I definitely agree with Nancy on this one because I agree with Nancy on this.
Okay, that's good. Thanks.
Okay, so if I could just hear if there's an adjustment to that, I'm open to hearing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So go ahead.
I think the intent of it is that there are times when you do get done with public comment and some questions are raised again, and there's the, you know, we do say, oh, you know, let's kind of reopen it for public comment, period. That happens sometimes with public hearing when you want to hear from the applicant. But I think to address Councilman Johnson's question is I think if you're going to do a majority and reopen a public comment period to allow a speaker come back up, it really should be opened up to everybody. And I think that's where the fairness could be addressed by saying that, so that there isn't that issue where you're allowing one person to get up and re-speak and not another one.
And I think that's in Robert's Rule of Order anyway, right? I mean, once you close public comment, if you open it up for an additional remark, it's open until it's declared closed again. So,
but if it hadn't been closed, you know, then the issue is if it hasn't been closed, you know, are you going to allow someone to come back up and speak again if they got back in line? And this was, I've had firsthand experience with this in Atascadero. During the Walmart, when, you know, public comment went till 3 a.m. in the morning because people wanted to get back in line because they wanted to keep rebutting what other people had to say.
So to tidy this, then, it would still – the suggestion would be to eliminate the second section of that. But would not restrict us from – if we were to open it back up to public comment – that's what we would have. There's nothing. There's no language in here that restricts us from opening up to public comment again.
Right.
Okay. So, what would the suggestion on that be then? We need to add the language limit comments or to 3 minutes until others have the opportunity to address council or at the discretion of the mayor, and then the following sentence is deleted with the ending sentence, a speaker may not yield their time to another speaker, is included. Okay. You got that? Okay.
And the only change to this also that's being removed is previously they had the ability that the mayor could request speaker cards on an item. That was a change that was made probably 4 or 5 years ago. I don't specifically state that the public comment will occur after questions from council, so I probably come up with language so it's clear that's when it happens.
In regard to what?
The public, the question was, is do we take the public comment after the staff report or after the staff report and questions by council?
Okay.
And that's not addressed in this policy. It just says that public comment will be after the staff report, and it doesn't even mention when the questions are. So we'll plug in language that says it's specifically after any questions from council.
Okay.
On page 23, I have just a question about 1.3.10.3.
Okay.
Confidential materials provided for closed sessions must be returned to the city attorney. We have not done that, and there are times we make a lot of notes. Could we just say instead of must, could be or should be or maybe or?
I would just like the statement in there that the material is confidential and shall not be disclosed. Like 15 years I've been here, I've never had a problem with council keeping matters confidential. This probably came from a policy from another city that probably was having some problems.
Yeah.
With that issue, and so I know you're right. I mean, if I give you a memo, you write all over it, and now you don't have your notes anymore, and those notes could be valuable to you as the issues come up. So unless you agree you're not going to write on it anymore, then I'm going to ask for them back.
Well,
I think what you just said made really good sense at the beginning of that confidential materials provided for closed session must be kept confidential by council members or
I have some point of clarity on that. Our last closed session, it just listed the lease sites. We made notes on that. That wasn't a confidential document.
And no, it had confidential at the top. It was a confidential memo.
Okay.
Yeah.
It didn't need to be a confidential document, though. It just listed, all it did was list the lease sites.
No, you're talking about the closed session agenda. There was actually a memo.
Exactly.
That was, the agenda.
Agenda, we could write all those notes on there.
You could write them on the agenda, correct, and not on the actual memo and then return it. You'll just have to get used to not writing on it because I don't want your notes.
I think there are, it needs to be clarified. I understand that. But I think there's information that we receive in closed session that I, for one, would like to keep in my confidential file so that I can refer back to what it was without always coming in and having you or Dana look it up. And I think as long as there's something in there that makes it perfectly clear that anything we take from that room in a closed session must remain confidential. I mean, we are kind of sworn officers of the city or something. I don't know.
Any other comments?
The death penalty, right. George is going to get you.
Any other comments? None? Any comments on Nancy's comments on proceeding with confidential information?
I guess I'm just asking city attorney what's normally done elsewhere, you know.
It's a mixed bag. Some of them are just like this. Some of them are just keeping it confidential. There's other cities that will watermark each one of the council members' memos so that if it is leaked or anything, you'd know exactly who it came from. And so that's I mean, they'll do that. I personally, like I said, 15 years here, I've never had a problem with closed session and anything discussed with it being leaked or a problem with it. And so I'm fine with just knowing that, you know it's confidential, but if you feel that we need to have this in here, I'm fine with that too. And it'll just be returned. We'll make sure we get it back. And you'll have to know not to write notes on it. If I see you writing notes on it, I'll tell you to write it on a piece of paper. So it's totally up to council how they want to go with it.
Any other comments on how they'd like to go on that?
I think I made mine clear.
Noah?
Yeah, I'm not feeling really strong either way. I think the track record shows that this has been safeguarded, the information there. I tend to agree with Nancy that it's very helpful to be able to carry those memos forward with the notes and the information in the memo, and that we protect that information and are responsible with it.
Does that mean we'd be deleting this island item then?
Well,
that's what I'm hearing.
I wouldn't delete it. Oh, no. I think it needs to be remarked that it's confidential. And then we could just write dot, 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 or else.
Or George will get you.
I could strongly suggest we keep it in there. That
yeah.
It's,
yeah.
But,
I'm glad to hear that.
Yes.
It'll come back at your next meeting with a resolution.
Okay.
I don't think there's anything substantial that I'd put it on the old business. I would put it on consent because I think we'd be there ready to approve it.
Yeah, so we don't need a motion on this because it's coming back. Okay. All right, good. Thank you. So D5 is complete. On to D6. And we're on to our discussion on the status of the City of Morro Bay and Cayuga Sanitary District Wastewater Treatment Plant Project and review and approval of letters to state and federal legislators regarding support and funding for the project. And this is also open for status as well. So there is a proposed letter here. And I think I sent an email out basically just clarifying some of the finer points on this, and that would be that, as agreed at the previous council meeting, that this would be forwarded on to Cayucas, and we would be requesting their participation in this as well. And it's basically a letter that is going to be sent out to our legislators and with their information and of our wastewater treatment plant and our project, and just letting them know that, and you know, it might be easier for me to read this for the public. So, and does anybody have any comments on this as far as language, first of all? No?
You could just summarize
it. Yeah, it basically, as I was stating, a letter that basically it identifies our wastewater treatment plant project we are being challenged as far as relocating it, and we're taking this letter and presenting it and sending it to our state legislators just to get it on their radar screen, just so that we could maintain contact with them. And I think one further step would be to, with as stated last meeting, that specifically having conversation with Lois Kapp's office and seeing what kind of federal funding might be available. So without having a letter to start with, that was the basic proposal, and that's what we're looking at tonight. Any other comments? None?
Not about you, not about the letter.
Okay. So this would go out as is, and if we are all in agreement to that, okay. Do we any comments?
I would say we want a motion to approve it. In that if it's 5-0, then everybody's signature line would go on that. I think that was one of the ideas.
That'd be great.
Also.
Yeah.
The problem I have with that is the letter might be difficult if all five of you sign it, and then CSD signs off, and there'll be 10 signatures on that. Is that too many?
Oh, it looks good.
Yeah. Comments? I'll make a motion to approve the letter as written.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. And that brings us
Are we discussing other aspects of our project tonight?
Yeah, and I was going to, if you have some any other comments, you want to comment on that, go ahead. We'll start off with that, and I think we have some comments from staff as well.
Thank you. Well, first I just wanted to say it was very encouraging, or it has been encouraging, to hear that Cayucas is moving forward. As I remember, the direction at our last JPA meeting was that both groups would move forward and we would come back and compare notes at the next meeting. So, in that light, Mr. Leivick, do you have a progress report on our wastewater treatment project? Where are we?
You know, I was asked the same question at our Public Works Advisory Board, and didn't really have a good answer for them because, you know, staff really doesn't have good direction on how to proceed from the City of Morro Bay. We have not moved forward at all on this project. Ms. Luker prepared a kind of a draft things to do list that we have in front of you now. And it talks about what activities we would anticipate doing in the short term.
Done something pursuant to your direction. Your direction was to obtain an appraisal of the Rigetti property. The city has hired the services of a Joanne Wall, who specializes in agricultural appraisals in the area. She's out of town this week, but we are setting up a meeting. I've spoken with Mike Ryan, the real estate agent for the property also, and we'll be getting access probably the first week in March or the second week in March to get her access to the property. She'll begin that process. She thinks that turnaround should be about 45 days to 60 days, so we can expect to have an appraisal done middle of March, end of March, worst case scenario, beginning of April. So,
okay, thanks for the clarification. So now we're ready.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Okay, so rather than putting all our eggs in the Rigetti basket, I have suggested two or three times that we may want to hire a project manager, and that's kind of fallen flat. So my newest and greatest idea is that we hire a hydrologist, someone who knows about a water engineer, basically, paid for by the water department, because that's where the money goes that's being saved up for this wastewater treatment plant. And this person would investigate possible sites for our wastewater treatment plant, perhaps even going back over formerly dismissed sites from the DUDEC report, which I've been reading, and then reporting back to council I think at this point, on what this person has discovered and what they think our options are in terms of finding a location.
You have a question?
I don't have a question. I'll wait for council comments. Then.
Thank you. Noah, do you have anything?
Yes, I'm glad to hear that we're ready to begin work on this project. We had been strongly encouraged to avoid proceeding with any sort of work after we had talked with Cayucas, which I have not been in favor of. I feel like we needed to initiate much of this work a month ago, but we're now through that meeting with Cayucas and moving forward. It's good to see. And I'm glad that staff has started to generate a list of items that we need to work on. Basically a project timeline, a rough project timeline. I'd like to see this definitely refined and brought back to us at the next meeting. And I'd like to see it display items as far as short-term, midterm, and long-term being the completion of the project, short-term being things that we can initiate in the next couple of months, so that we can really draw out on this list and items that aren't on this list how we can work concurrently on some of these different tasks, because I think obviously it's important for us to get some of this work going. I also think it's important for us to talk about at the next meeting with Cayucas how, as work is being initiated for our project, anticipating that Cayucas may be participating or may not, we need to get clear about how they're going to compensate their fair share of any of this work in the pursuit of our new project. We need to have that discussion. So I'd like to see that on our agenda with Cayucas. I think the rough project timeline is something that we can bring back to our next meeting, which is before the next JPA meeting. I also would like to see the project manager discussion, I think, is an important one. It's on our rough timeline, but I'd like to get that on our next agenda. And definitely get the discussion about the location process going so that we see that getting information about the potential sites does take some time. So I'd like us to start to wade into how are we going to identify the potential sites, because no one's made up their mind yet, I don't think, about where we're going. We have some on the table, and the location discussion needs to be initiated. So I'd like to see that brought back to us in some form at the next council meeting.
May I make one really quick interruption, just for the sake of folks at home? What you're referring to, did you want to take a minute and describe? You're referring to a list from staff, but it wouldn't have been in a staff report. I don't know if we can discuss that or not, disclose that or not, draft. Okay, just because you're referring to a list, and I'm not, maybe people are wondering where is the list, if you wouldn't mind explaining.
From that JPA meeting to work off of.
Great. Okay, that assures me that our time at the last meeting was productive. One other item that I wanted to update on, it's a correspondence we received from the county parks and the parks golf superintendent in relation to, this was received by all of us, in relation to their effort, which will be to update their water system, their water delivery system and supply system, which is basically needing investment. And their invitation to participate in some preliminary discussions with us about their interest potentially in reclaimed water. So I wanted to give Mr. Livick a chance to confirm that we're in communication with them responding to this, and that we will be setting up a meeting with them to just get preliminary dialogue going.
If you mean communication by leaving each other voicemails, yes, we are in communication at this point.
Great, and you'll keep us posted then?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The only other thing that I have here that isn't on our list, I think continues to get a little bit forgotten, is we really have never we've never followed up on the goals, objectives, and success criteria that the council visited at one point. I have the date. I don't have it written down here. And I'd like to see some part of the early phases of this, that we revisit that list, that we improve on it, and get a little more function out of that as our guideline for what we're trying to achieve. We did have an approved success criteria from the council. It was brought up to the JPA, and we just really haven't utilized anything like that to try to guide our decision making as we go through the process. So I'd like to see that included as part of the preliminary activities section. And that's it. Thanks.
George, do you have any comments?
Well, now that we decided we're not going to the beach, just exactly where are we going from here? I mean, that Cayucas meeting we all talk about, what did we really get out of that? I would like to, can somebody give me an answer to that? What really happened there? I haven't figured it out yet.
I'd be glad to talk about it in a minute if you're done, or if you want to talk
about it.
Okay,
because right now the staff's looking for a direction, and we're going to have to start giving these people a direction to go.
Yep.
Now, where do we exactly start there? That's my question.
Okay. Christine?
Oh, thank you. Perfect segue. Councilmember League. I think I bet Mr. Livick feels like he has a lot of direction from Mr. Smuckler's comments. But I have a question for staff that's been floating around here and there in the community, and this is concept, and I wanted to get your feedback on it, of an RFI and a request for information on proposals. And it normally looks like it's dealing with things that are perhaps technology, or could you just comment on what an RFI would be and if there's any interest in that, or if you've had experience with that, just kind of open that up.
RFP, request for proposal, RFI, request for information. It's the RFI process is generally associated with the construction activities. So you're already building something, and the contractor will go to you. I'm not clear on how exactly I do this. That's called an RFI. RFP would be what you would do to solicit input from a consultant to give you ideas on what to do in the future. There's another process. It's called the RFQ process, request for qualifications. So you don't really know what you want to do, but you know there's somebody out there that does, and you want those qualified folks to be able to input. So you would go through that RFQ process and say, we want all the qualified people on, if you give me some latitude, I'd like to talk about this preliminary activity item up here. It's something that in an internal staff discussion we talked about, because as we've gone through this process for relocating the treatment plant, we've been kind of stuck on, we're going to build an oxditch plant on our existing facility and discharge to the ocean. Are we still going to do that as a city? Do we need to take a step back and decide what are the goals and objectives for this waste? I'm not saying this has to be a long, drawn-out process, but I think we need to at least touch base with the community and determine, do we still have the same goals and objectives that we had at the beginning of this when we were reconstructing to other methods, like the discussion that we went down the road with PERC Water, you know, to revisit, at least touch base with that idea. And what level of water reclamation commitment do we want to see out of this project? So I think those are, some of the items that I think even before we get to digging into the weeds of the site selection and, you know, how we get a project manager and build this plant and developing the IR, I think we need to touch base and answer those questions first before we proceed forward on to those next steps. And we might have to answer those for our own community, not for Cayucas, before we get back together with them. Sorry, I'm no, excited, you know, about this. But
this is... Yeah. This is a good segue.
That's fabulous. Thank you very much. That was
this
wonderful.
This is a good segue into my comments. And first of all, thank you for that, because while we all had comments up here on direction, my question is that. I mean, you know, for us to give you direction, five of us giving you different direction is not going to help. This outline that we have in front of us is a great start. And the other question, aside from this, is, you know, you have an outline here, is, and it may seem a little naive, but it's what direction do you need from us to proceed? And I don't say that with ignorance at all, but I don't think that we all need to say it needs to be green, it needs to be this on this side of the street, and it needs to be having water that runs to the ocean or recharging an aquifer. I don't think we need to give those types of details. We need to proceed forward. I think it's clear that a project manager is going to be integral to be doing this, because I don't feel as though, as a staff, that we can do this. Right at the very beginning of this, you have issuance of an RFP for a project manager or facilitator, probably something we should get going on right away. And if we look at the proposal that our partners, constituents in Cayucas, pretty darn good proposal, pretty good outline of what we need to do. I don't think we all need to be giving you the specific direction of the color, the size, the type of water. I think we need to. This outline addresses a lot of it. I think your presentation that you just gave us is really where we need to be starting. And if it means that just giving direction or approval to proceed for an RFP for a project manager tonight, if that's what staff needs, then that's what we need to discuss. All these other items are fleshed out further down the way. So I would suggest that we, with some more dialogue from staff, discuss prioritizing what we should be doing next. And with that, I'd like to hear what you have to say. Mr. Livick, thanks.
I think we should proceed post-haste with getting somebody on board that can lead us through this process. And like I said, as much as I like other engineers, I don't think we're it for this project, for this portion of the project. I think we need somebody that has some technical skills but sees the bigger picture. I see it more of a planning type person.
Maybe more than one person.
Maybe more than one person. Yes. Maybe it's a firm.
Yes.
When we were going down the road of the alternatives analysis and we interviewed some consultants, we talked to a bunch of smart people that have done things like this before. Dudek was just one of them. We heard from John Rickenbach, a local planner, and his team about how to do this. We heard from some other folks on how to do this. So I think we could develop a fairly short list, get proposals from these folks on, and kind of flush out these first preliminary activities, what we would want to see them, you know. We would probably want to see public workshops held, or at least a public workshop held, to solicit ideas. And have them rank their ideas and lead the council in a study session through this process. Once we get done with this, then we can kind of move on to these next steps, which are much more technical in nature.
Thank you. So priority number one, discuss whether or not we would direct staff to proceed with an RFP for a project manager, as I see it. Would you concur?
I concur.
Okay.
Mayor?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. What we would like to do...
project managers and whether council wants to be on that selection committee and who would be on it. So those are some of the issues we can bring back in 2 weeks.
So both of those would be brought back, mm-hmm. an RFP for a project manager and the discussion
selection
for
process.
That. Okay, so there's two things right there.
And also working off this, it would be the work plan as refined as possible, short term, longer term, which would then be a working document as we get the project manager on for adjustments. But
yeah, I think the work plan would come with the project manager, as I understand it. I mean, and we go through the selection process. I don't know what you mean by the work plan. Are we including this in with the? Where are you going with that? Because it seems like we're a step ahead of ourselves on that.
Well, to me, the work plan would be taking this document, the draft that we have tonight, and breaking it down a little more about where each of these items falls into short term,
sure.
midterm, long term, as far as the life of the
sure.
project.
And I think this, as I understand it, and Mr. Livick, you might be able to comment, but this is an acceptable draft to be looking at for the project manager, for us to get to be working on that plan.
And what I'm hearing is maybe what we, for example, if we took site screening, that public process, we might want to put a length of a bar next to it that is proportional to the length of the time that it might take, without giving dates in there, so that we can see, you know, where things overlap.
Mm-hmm.
Just something to better manage our time as we move forward with this project.
Yeah, absolutely.
I understand what Mr. Smuckler is saying about this timeline. Yet, I really feel like tonight we need to at least make a decision to get this RFP moving and find a project manager. The next step, once we have a project manager, can be to work with that person or facilitator, whoever it is, to put this together and get a timeline.
I think we concur that we're all in agreement. That's what we want to do. I don't think do we need a motion for that? Or are we? Is there clear direction on that?
We'd like a motion on where we're going, but I would say that we'll use a portion, and I think I don't want I'll reiterate it, but we'll use a portion of what has been produced in the RFP, so the project manager has an idea. We will continue to fine tune with the project manager as well. So we're going to use it in both ways.
So I would make a motion that we give direction to staff to go out for RFP for a project manager with RFP for a project manager and to bring it back with an RFP for project manager with and I'm going to refer to you, Mr. Schultz, one more time on the other comments that we should be including on this and the selection process. Thank you. So the RFP, the motion would be stated as such. We'd be directing staff to bring back an RFP for a project manager and the selection process as two agenda items for our next meeting.
And a refined, I'm not sure what chart we're
calling. And a refined outline?
Yeah,
and a refined outline. With a timeline.
Right. And many of that items in the refined outline will actually be in the request for proposal because that's what we're kind of asking them to be prepared to do.
Okay.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. This item, there's one other comment. I just have one more question. Because this was kind of a discussion and status. So I have one more question for you, Mr. Livick. And you spoke earlier about, what are we doing? Are we doing an ox ditch? Are we doing X, Y, Z? Where are we going with our existing plant? My understanding was we're going out for a major maintenance renovation plan. And once we get that, that'll come back to us to prioritize what we're doing with the existing plant. Did I misunderstand you in what you were saying?
Well, sorry. What I said was we knew what we were doing when we were reconstructing the treatment plant at our existing site location. It was an ox ditch with an ocean outfall and tertiary filtration. On this new site, wherever it is that still the methodology that we're still going with?
Right.
I didn't want to confuse. I may have confused that with the major maintenance plan. That's still running a separate but parallel track with this. We still need to keep the plant running.
I would like to have some sort of regular status report on how that's going and at least some understanding that, we're doing okay on this. We're to a point where we do need to be hiring outside consultants to keep this going. I would like to have that kind of feedback from staff on how we're proceeding that. And I would hope, I don't know if we want to make a motion to that or if we would have a majority of, agreement on that, but that's my request.
We could make that as a part of a regular ongoing report to the JPA. So
and
like
council.
Like we do at our regarding the treatment plant status, operational status, we could have a MMRP status, an update memo that would come to council and to the JPA.
Great, thank you.
I would hope that we wouldn't want to do that on a more than a monthly basis.
Absolutely,
okay.
Yes.
What Mr. Livick said just seems really natural because at this point the power plant wastewater plant is jointly owned with Cayucas, and so it seems to me that reports on how we're doing with keeping the old plant going until we get something new would be most appropriately addressed at a JPA meeting.
What I'm asking specifically is regular updates, whether it's bi-monthly or bi-weekly, rather, if it's, you know, just some sort of status on that. And to your comment, if we need to do it more than monthly, I would trust that that's in your best judgment what we need to do. But the emphasis for me is that's my concern, and I would like to have that feedback.
What I would suggest is that we do a monthly memo, and regardless if there's a JPA meeting or not, we would transmit it to both the council and the Cayuga Sanitary District Board. Regardless if we have to cancel a meeting for some reason, they still get the update memo, and so do you.
Great, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I think you brought up a good point, because obviously our staff is burdened with a whole number of other issues as well. And so I think we were clear at the meeting that we're going to proceed in-house, but that if it appeared that we were just not able to carry it forward as quickly as we need to, considering all the other things that we're putting on top of staff, then we're open to that recommendation, and the contracting out would be something I'd be willing to consider at that point.
But now are you talking about maintaining the project we have, or for a new project?
I'm going to call up one point of order, going back and forth for a minute. So I understand the comments, and I appreciate your comments as well, just some relative point of order in this. And please proceed with your comments, and thank you.
I just wanted some clarity from Mr. Smuggler as to what, I mean, because Mr. Liebig has been talking about two different projects. I mean, we have the project of keeping what we have going, and then we have a new project. So when you're looking at outside contractors, Mr. Smuggler, are you talking about maintaining what we have currently or looking at the new project?
That was with the maintaining project.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Nancy. Are we all done? I think we're done with D5. That would conclude this meeting and the future agenda items. I did that once before, didn't I? Oh, okay. So future agenda items. I heard all that paper shuffling from George, and I thought, it's time to go.
Well, you just heard it now.
Okay. Declaration of future agenda items, please. Any future agenda items?
Yes. Okay. I would like, because I have spoken to Ms. Slayton about this before, so I am going to see if we could get, if I could get consensus for a vehicle maintenance and replacement policy. There's one kind of in the works, maybe, though not until September, coming back, you know, in several months, but just before I forget.
I would support that.
Okay.
Anybody else?
I had one more, actually. It's a very different topic, but I'm thinking about community events, and I was wondering if we could consider a community events inventory. So basically a report that would be a who, what, where, about events, what kind of city support the events are getting currently, what marketing is being done for the event. So just what is it considered a
community? So to kind of sum up the community event list, and is that more in relation to what the cost is to the city on all the events, and what are the number of lists and events that go on per year, and how much cost is that to the city in their involvement? Is that more to what you're getting at?
Well, that would be a component for sure, yes.
And is that what's covered with our Visitors Bureau? Are they doing that?
I believe it's something they're looking at, and as a member of the Economic Development Committee, I would certainly be more than happy to ask them to add it to their list.
Would you like to give that a go before we agendize something like that?
Yeah, I'll definitely follow up. I didn't realize there was major efforts underway, so I will follow up with them, and then we'll see where we go. But I think it's an important component, because I know the community, there are issues and questions about funding sources and things like that. So thanks.
Great. Thank you. Anything else?
Yeah, I just want to open the door to some form of city participation with the bike park, whether that's a resolution or whatever is requested from the group when it's appropriate.
Absolutely. Thanks for bringing that forward. Anybody else to support that?
I will.
Okay. And so city support for the bike park in form of resolution or any other form specific? Is that what do you have a specific request for that?
I wanted to leave it open-ended, so it gave them the flexibility to propose to us what would be most helpful.
Okay.
Mayor Irons?
Yes.
I believe that the group is going to be, I can only think of the word performing, but they're going to be presenting. Presenting in front of the Recreation and Parks Commission on the March 21st meeting, and so you may get a request recommendation from the Recreation and Parks Commission to spend some time looking at this. So I think it sounds like we're going in the same direction with that. Okay.
Okay. One more? Okay. So we have a vehicle maintenance replacement project and city support for the bike park. Okay. Are we good on that? Okay. That would conclude our meeting. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.